You're listening to Fakeologist's Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. To participate in the chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. Each day, we compress and upload the day's chat, be it big or small. Leave a quick message, do a whole show. All are welcome when it's related to fakeology. Now, on with today's audio.
Good evening and welcome. My name is Velocet and you're listening to the Fakeologist.com audio live stream chat.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist audio chat on Fakeologist.com.
We were joined somewhat unfortuitously there by the ab announcement for sponsorship, which caught us somewhat off guard.
Please give.
It was so funny. It was the top of the hour. I knew that was coming.
I didn't even think of it. I just went straight into...
I should have pre-warned you.
The live stream thing.
You haven't given the date today. What's the date? Come on. Professional boy.
Currently the 21st of the 4th, 2018, and 11 p.m. here in Australia, and I don't know what...
And Mars is in Venus.
Who is he? Good luck to him.
So I was like, totally shits me to death that, you know, my intro didn't work the way I'd hoped.
It didn't. I was waiting for...
Nothing ever works the way it works. Expect, Bella said. When anything can go wrong, it'll go wrong.
It's Mars is in Venus. Mars is in Venus. So it made the introduction.
The way, you know. Mm-hmm. What am I supposed to do? I can't believe
Why don't you introduce your guests?
Currently here in the live stream chat with Rollo from
New York. Hello. Thanks for having me. Yes.
And Rick.
Exoteric 64. Rick from Port Macquarie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who knows who else might join tonight? But yeah, it's been a great chat in the green room. We had Faye in the green room. Wonderful. Yes.
Where did she go?
I'll join you in the amount of time you've been on air. But yeah, we were talking in, was it room 11 or room 33?
11. 11.
Right. Yeah. How about we start with, I'll start with something quite poignant. My wife's uncle died yesterday. His name was Warren Steele. And, it's been a pretty troubling day yesterday, but I really do want to thank you, Velocet, and you, Rick, for cheering me up, and especially Faye as well. Cheering me up because it's never fun when all right, it's my wife's uncle, so it's no real relation, but I don't want to take the piss too much out of Dave J, but people do die, and
they do.
He didn't get hurt, but he did die, so so I got my suit freshly sent to the dry cleaners today. So yeah, for the funeral next Thursday, but there you go. I didn't mean to do a start the show on the Debbie Downer, but thank you, Velocet, for having me. Yep.
And thank you for having me too.
I'm sorry for the death in the family, and I don't mean to wish you spiritual death, but the thing I'm most disappointed about is the fact that the intro didn't go the way that I expected. But what exactly was it about Rick and I that cheered you up a bit?
Because I think it's honesty and I think it's because loneliness, because you guys are into fakeology as much as you are, and you're only 27 and Rick's a little bit older than me. He's 54. I'm 48. And that last hour chat in the green room, was just tremendous for me, and it makes me happy.
That's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. We've been chatting for a little while, and we covered a lot of topics. I mean, heaven forbid you should actually ask me to recall what we were talking about. But, I mean, I know I felt a lot of peace at, you know. So, I mean, go forward and actually speak here on the live stream. And that's what I'd suggested. The fact that we leave room 11 and actually have a chat on the live stream, because I think what we were coming out with was probably worth putting to air and just see how it goes from there.
Sure. Well, you expressed an interest in taking this forward and doing a lot more work, because you're next Wednesday now. Hopefully I'm not speaking out of turn here. Next Wednesday, Faye can't be here, so you're going to do Radio 55 with Ab, which is something I'm looking forward to.
Judging by our chat, Faye seemed, and I don't, like, let's go back a few podcasts here. She discussed the, like out of nowhere, I was listening, and I heard you and her and Ab talking about the fact that you enjoyed my voice, and I had such an intelligent voice, and blah, blah, blah. And I don't mean to, you know, big note myself, but
Sydney. You do have a marvelous radio voice. I mean, if you don't know that, I mean, all right, it's not John Laws, but it's certainly Paul Bevan.
I appreciate the compliment.
You blockheaded bastard.
Rollo. I've recently been through the Sydney bushfires, and I have a few contacts at ABC Radio here in Sydney. So I'd called into them, and they put me on air. So I had my chance to, update people in the Sydney region on what was going on, which was a big compliment to me. But I had a friend send me my own audio off of the ABC logger. So, that, you know, ABC record everything they put to air, right? Mm-hmm. So a friend of mine who works at the ABC had cut it off the logger and sent me copies of everything I'd said on air. So I distributed that to a number of my friends in the broadcast industry. And it was remarkable the amount that had said, oh, wow, you sound so much more intelligent. You sound so much more professional. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, don't I sound that way normally? And apparently that's not the case. So I take this as a compliment.
Mm. Well, you do. I mean, you've obviously had training in – sorry, keep going. Yeah, sorry, keep going.
I hopped into the Room 11 live stream chat tonight, and I was talking to you guys. Faye came on, and we had a little chat with her, and she said, listen, I'm not going to be able to make it to Fakeologist 55 this week. Would you be willing to step in for me? So I said, well, look, I mean, I'm willing to give it a go. So we went from there. So she's already messaged me in the private chat, and she set it up with Ab that I'll be stepping in for Fakeologist 55. So I'm like, okay, let's go with it. So hopefully I'm up to date enough on – you know, these days, Fakeologist events to be able to pull the show off. But, we thought we'd hop in here live and just have a chat about what we were discussing in the last hour or two and go from there.
Yeah.
Again, we're all wearing our Mason's aprons as we speak.
I'm hiding my erection.
Yeah, because Rick, your brother gave you the Mason's apron. There's a wonderful picture, and you've made that. You've made that public in Dell's Bar. Have you made it public over here?
I'm not sure, but it's there, and it's me mowing my lawn.
Yeah.
Whilst
do you want me to put it into the live stream chat? Am I allowed to do that?
Possibly not, in case John Laws is listening, because of course he's my uncle.
All right, I won't do it. Are you joking?
Of course I'm joking.
All right, I'll put it in the live stream chat.
Yeah, okay. Everything I say is almost a parody of whatever.
Sure.
But no, it's good to hear. And Velocet, of course, does have the most professional voice and the most professional microphone of any of us on this channel. So we're all keen to hear his dulcet tones and being 20 years younger than you and 25 years younger than me or so, he's most welcome to have his opinions shared, and we're most appreciative that he has an opinion that's contrary to the masses that we have to put up with in real life. So it's good. It's wonderful. So, Bella said, you lead the way.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate the sentiment, but I don't think what I have to offer is that much beyond the average person or the average fakeologist.
Are you kidding?
The average person is the average person is imbecile.
Ray Hadley there. Ray Hadley.
He is imbecile.
Keep going.
And I'm being kind.
You are being kind. Yeah.
I'm being kind. The average person out there is beyond imbecile. He's profane of the lowest profane level that you can get. So we'll go with Villaset and his wonderful microphone and his training, which he has clearly. And while he might not be quite at the moment, A.A. Morris, who I hold up as one of the best talents that's just appeared as a truth talker, he's very good and he's polite and prepared to go either way in his beliefs, which is what you need to be in this zone. So, Villaset, you lead your way.
Say that. I'm curious. A few weeks ago on the podcast, Rollo made a comment in a live stream with JLB that A.A. Morris is a better researcher than both of us. And that was your quote, Rollo. And
oh, he's JLB, amazing.
JLB seemed to take offense to that. So,
Sorry to be rude.
I was just saying, what exactly was your thought behind that, Rollo?
I'll talk if he's not going to talk. A.A. Morris comes across to me as an experienced listener of hundreds and hundreds, more thousands of hours of talks, as a really genuine voice and apologetic to his views that may, if they may offend anyone else. He's polite. He's just everything that you need with a truth talker. He's a John, we've lost via Chris Kendall's show via that minor squabble. He's replaced everybody. He's just amazing. That's my opinion.
So you would say it was more the fact that he was able to articulate things from a listener's point of view rather than...
I can't articulate it as strongly as I mean, but without sounding groveling, but he just really has the voice that's needed. He's polite. He gives credence to the people he's listened to his, where he's got his opinions from. He doesn't say anything that's too off the wall. He just seems to, I can't say anything better that he's probably the best I've heard for a long time that's just suddenly appeared within in my mind about the last month. Maybe it's 2 months, but he's really, really good. He's somehow got 45 podcasts on YouTube, mainstream podcast, you know, iTunes. I think he's got 45 or 46 podcasts already. And I've listened to probably half that, and the stuff that he's intimating is really, really good. He's got the sound. He's not offensive. He's not insulting anyone. He gives a lot of support to people he's got the information from and gives credit where credit's due. So I'm really happy being a person that listens to a lot of the stuff. So what do you think? What
really is interesting about it, he does seem to have come out of nowhere. I mean, for someone literally, who supposedly has been involved with the scene for quite a while, you know, it only seems in the last few months that he started to churn out podcast after podcast after podcast, and he's got so much, you know, information available. Why do you think that is?
I don't know why it is, but sometimes if you're awake and your mind's already been active and you're intelligent, the stuff will just feed into your brain like a siphon, and he's getting so much stuff going in at the same time, possibly, that he's being able to rationalize everything and understands how hard it is to explain to the public these things, and gives it in a really nice, polite way whilst giving credence to Chris Kendall and even John Le Bon. He gives the credit where credit's due during his speeches. So he's a phenomenon, and I really do listen to a lot of stuff, and he really is quite unusual in this realm. He's friendly, he's polite, he's intelligent, and he's humble, and that's really good. I'm really happy to hear someone that's just appeared. And I don't feel suspicious whatsoever, although he does, he's so prolific that it's, to me, I mean, I just can't visualize myself being able to do what he's doing. Just incredible.
No, he certainly does have an affect that seems a lot less threatening and seems to present information in a way that we can all accept.
Yeah, it's like he's got a clone four times and each one of them speaking, getting their information through the same thing and doing the same podcast at the same time and then releasing it somewhat simultaneously, and it's arriving on iTunes as, you know, in real time, and it's there. And I've listened yesterday alone to probably, I think I listened to 17 hours straight, and each podcast I probably grabbed four or five amazing things that I didn't know. And I'm just baffled that someone can come up with that information, but maybe it's possible. Obviously it's possible. It's happening.
Mm.
So I'm happy.
Mm. Would you like
nuggets,
to expand on that, Robert?
Yeah. Nuggets.
So are we talking about A.A. Morris here?
Yes.
Yes, A.A. Morris. Yeah, I've only got the highest respect for him and his podcast. It's interesting you should bring up JLB. We were talking off air with Velset. Velset, do you want to talk? You actually met John Le Bon in real life. Tell us about that, mate.
Interesting that you say that we were talking about JLB, because I don't think we were talking about JLB, but...
Well, Esoteric Rick brought JLB up just then. Yeah, you met JLB in real life. Tell us what it's real like. Is his head really that big? Sorry. Am I taking the piss or what?
Possibly.
I think you are a bit.
All right. Yeah.
Maybe, Rollo, it's a effect from the curvature of the earth. His head looks slightly different, but it might actually just be the same size as you think it is.
It looks flat to me. He's got a flat head.
I was going to say it looks rounder than it should be.
Yeah.
Depends.
All right. You keep on with AA Mark. Way above.
Way above
my pay grade.
Maybe you're the guy that keeps showing us pictures against our will, because I didn't necessarily need to see that, but yeah, yet I am.
Everybody can go to the live stream now and have a look at Rick there mowing his lawn with his apron on, with his Freemason apron on. It's a classic picture.
I've Yeah. Rick just posted of Exoteric64, and he's got a picture of him with very long hair. He looks like something out of Led
Zeppelin. He was. And that was 1979. Wow. No, 1981.
81. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I'm in the wrong room. Live stream show notes. All right. Okay.
Yeah, I look like a sheep.
My name is Velocet. And I'm a member of JLB.com or JohnLeBon.com, as most of you are aware. About 2 weeks ago, JLB and I caught up on the north coast of New South Wales. He drove down from Brisbane and I drove up from Sydney. And I already planned to be there for a few family events to do, so I thought that it'd be best to make use of the opportunity and meet up with JLB while he was, in the area. He could drive down, and I could drive up, and we'd be able to meet up and hang out. And it went quite well. Is there anything else in particular you guys need to know about that?
Basically, what would I like to know? Is he the same in real life as he is when he's on air? What's he like in real life? You know what he's on air. You know how his radio style is. Is he the same in real life, or is he different? Is he playing a character, or is he the same on air as he is in real life? It's a simple question.
I'm fully aware of how he is on air. I mean, although I haven't been so much involved with Fakeologist in the last few months, so I got involved with months ago. Did an interview with Ab, and her humor of the media since that point. It's only recently that I've started to get involved in producing content. The worst part, he's the same kind of person. I mean, the stuff he says online is the same person he is in real life. It's not like I'm here to point out some huge conspiracy where he's a totally different guy you know, on air.
I'm not looking for any conspiracy. I was just a simple question. It's just like, is he the same in real life as on air? I mean, some people are bizarre. When I've met people, the radio guys, that you see them off air and then they're complete cunts. And when they get on air, and then they seem like really nice people. You know what I mean? It's just, it's just a different, whereas I'm, what you hear now, what you see is a WYSIWYG type thing. What you see is what you get right now with me. It's always been the way. Cause if you start to, what is it called? Do it differently. Like Ab says, if you start lying or whatever you do, you have to start remembering lies, and it just gets all complicated. So I'd rather just be who I am all the time, even though Rollo is not my real name, and I know John Lebon's not his real name, Velocet's not your real name, and Exoteric's not his real name. And people that want to pick points on that, it's nothing wrong with having nicknames. Nicknames are fine. I just wanted to know, is the guy the same off-air as he is on-air?
Well, if you have to put it down to that point, then yes, I would say he's more the guy on air as off air than not. I would say he's more the person off air than he is on air. You know what I mean? Right. Like, if it had to come down to that simple dialectic, then yeah, that's sure. The case. I mean, we all have, you know, pseudonyms. For the majority of the time I spent with him, interestingly, I introduced him to people as John. It was just first nature for me. Jumped that because in my mind, the fact that I've spent, you know, 18 plus months following him, I'm used to his voice.
So he's not really John?
Jumped to that, and I naturally think his name's John when it's not, you know?
It's like John Laws. John Laws, his name's Richard. And I think he might not like the name Richard because people really? Might call him a dickhead because he is a dickhead a lot of the time, especially if he calls me a blockhead. Yeah, Richard really? John Laws. Yeah, Richard.
Really?
Yeah, look it up. No simple idea. To look up. Yeah. John's his real name. Yeah. That doesn't matter. I've always liked John Lebon. And I don't care what his real name is, but I've always liked him from the Aussie round table. So,
Well, good on a lot of the Aussie Roundtable shows because it was somewhat before my time. Like, since when I got involved with the, you know, alternative conspiracy truth realm, you know, it was more around the time of Flat Earth in 2015. So I'm not familiar with a lot of the sort of, content that was released before that. Yeah.
I can tell you. What it was basically a media watch style, what was his name? Lindsay and his mate Ethan. They did every Sunday for, I think, pretty much all through 2015 or 2014. I can't remember, but it was so cool though. And I look forward to it every Sunday. And then after that, he did a year where he did Ball Earth Skeptic with a fella, I forgot his name, but it was interesting to listen to because that was the year that all this Flat Earth, you know, Patricia Steer and Mark Sargent and all of that took over and the internet was a buzz that the world is flat. And a lot of people thought John Lebon was basically a flat earther, but he wasn't. He was just a Ball Earth Skeptic. So he was in there just sort of, you know, trying to work out what the hell's going on with this, which is, and I think it truly was a psyop to get NASA and, well, this new Elon Musk character that's come along with this floaty car in space to try and make them look more legitimate because they're not. They're absolutely fucked in the ass, if you ask me. And Flat Earth is the only thing that could possibly save them because a rocket goes up sideways and comes down. That's as simple as that. There's no outer space.
I think we can all agree on that. But I've got to admit, when I got involved, you know, with the ACT realm back in the day, it, you know, John Lebon's Globe Earth Skeptic Roundtable, it's, you know, like I get that at this point of view in time, he's like, you know, Globe Earth Skeptic does not equal Flat Earth.
And I agree.
And if you go back and listen to a lot of those shows, yes, he never says anything about Flat Earth or that is his point of view. However, at the time of a person who was interested in waking up to, you know, the conspiracy realm, it did seem very possible that someone who, you know, was purporting all this globe Earth side of flat Earth, and it was probably my, you know, lack of foresight that didn't see that was the case, you know. Like, it was very easy for me to believe that JLB was involved in flat Earth, even though he didn't actually specify that was the case.
Well, he never did an interview with Patricia Stier or Mark Sargent. The only one that I remember, it was Ab. And Ab just called Mark Sargent out of the blue just to see what he was up to. And that was an interesting. It didn't go for very long, 15, 20 minutes. It's something worth going back to.
It was one of the earliest flat Earth interviews that had been conducted.
It was. I think it was the first one that I remember. I can't remember Mark Sargent before that. Yeah.
And good on Ab for actually, you know, following leads, you know, like it shows that the guy is out there and he's actually following the stuff that's going on in the community. If he's willing to bring someone off the internet and actually question him about this new conspiracy that's been put forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did that way before too. Way before that, he rang a whole, had a whole bunch of interviews and, in the later years, he's, I mean, his work gets in the road, but he does this basically as a hobby, but it's a good hobby, and he doesn't mind.
He's a great Rick. He's got a great interview technique. I like him, and I like actually having listened to a lot of what he says. I like what he says.
Me too.
I've said this in a recent podcast, but if there was to be a Venn diagram of one circle was the alternative conspiracy truth realm, and one circle was to be the, you know, effective, good Howard Stern radio imitators, he would be right there in the center.
Oh, no,
and I stand by that. He's a guy who's got a natural talent for radio and the production of radio, and also understands, you know, sort of the kind of stuff we believe in. So I think he's very effective.
I think he's an all-rounder. In a cricketing analogy, an all-rounder. He can bat, bowl, and field, because or wicket keep as well. Because he, when it comes to Howard Stern, I mean, he had a big love for Howard Stern. He had the best mic, but Howard Stern was a lying son of a bitch when it comes to 9/11. Well, I don't know what Howard Stern knows about 9/11.
He certainly is not honest about it.
Audio live stream that shows you all about that. If you go back in time on the podcast, I posted a clip of Howard Stern reporting on 9/11.
Yeah. So, you know, as talented as Howard Stern, look, Howard Stern used to do the craziest antics, and didn't AC/DC do a movie about it, or they did the music to a movie about Howard Stern?
I don't know. I've never heard of it, but they possibly did for a bit of self-promotion. But Howard Stern isn't what you call credible as a journalist. He's mainstream cult.
And doesn't help that he's a New York Jew, isn't he? So he's going to look out for his Jew mates.
It's not anything to who or what he pretends to be. He's a personality that's like John Laws. Yeah. It's just someone that you're given to trust to listen to their opinion.
Yeah.
And he takes you in directions that you don't need to listen to. I
thought I would have triggered you there, Rick, with that anti-Semitic comment.
No. Well, because I'm a Mason and a Jew, why would I be like?
You're a classic.
Howard Stern, I've only seen bits and pieces of on YouTube clips and, you know, nothing I've listened to, but he's a figurehead like Laws is here. He shapes people's opinions. He's not to be listened to. He's like as credible as Alex Jones, you know, like, you know, we're not going to sit here listening.
Alex Jones or Alan Jones?
Either. As I've said, Alan Jones was the role model formula for Alex Jones, developed and tested for 10 years before they released Alex Jones onto America.
Was it you doing the Alan Jones impression before? Come on, can you do it again?
Yes.
What was the word?
I think. I'm just worried about you, Rollo. I think you're disgusting. You're the kind of person that I don't want to talk to.
It's good.
That's how he sounds. And he's just a person that makes older conservative people think the way they do because Alan says that they should think that way. And Alex Jones does that to the
And it's funny that they both have the same views on global warming or whatever.
Exactly. And so if you are so, have the strength and personality to say, well, I don't believe in global warming, your friends are going to accuse you of being an Alan Jones or an Alex Jones supporter. So that's what they're there for. They're there to humiliate people with rational minds.
We should get Bella said to play some Gloria. Well, Gloria. Laura Branigan. It was a song, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, but just Google Doug Mulray and Gloria on YouTube and you'll get Alan Jones.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
And so, well, Velocet's got the ability to play all of this now because Velocet's the man, aren't you?
In the meantime, can I point out that
Ecologist
is a sponsored site? So if you're one of the few that find yourself listening to Fakeologist, but you're not contributing, you're not part of the Discord server, but if you're listening to this on podcast, in your podcast feeder, and you're finding use from this kind of podcast, you should consider donating to Aberrato, the Fakeologist at fakeologist.com. You can sponsor the podcast for $1.99 US per month.
Or considering a one-time
donation of a larger amount. But
I'm going to give them $33.
I've donated in recent history, and JLB, who we were just discussing, has donated in recent history. And he said... JLB said, it would make you feel good. And I've got to say, it made me feel good. I've got a lot of, information from fakeologist.com, and I appreciate the fact that Ab has put the effort into, joining these systems, a phone conference system that allows people to get together and, discuss certain topics.
Chat.
With a podcast that allows it to be listened to by the masses. So if you feel you've got use out of it, you should consider donating. It's well worth the fee. Step up. It's well worth the fee.
$1.19.
Make you feel good. It really will. Is that the song you're after?
Oh.
Alan Jones' intro, isn't it?
Sure is.
Gloria. Gloria.
Well, I'm saying this. He was a role model for Alex Jones. He was rolled out 10 years before Alex Jones. He looks like Alex Jones. He doesn't sound like Alex Jones, but he has the same polarizing influence on your opinion for those that listen to mainstream media or slightly alt over in America. They are the same person. And they will give
you... That's much the way the mainstream media is. Like, they're all an influence on your opinion, right?
They are. Alan Jones is giving us our opinion, and Alex Jones is giving a certain degree of America their opinion. And he's a complete fake. They both are. Alex Jones' voice is fake. The entire shtick that he rolls is fake. And he's too imitable. If you're as imitable as he is, you are fake, as far as I'm concerned. Can we stop this now? Stop it. Please.
Was he playing Gloria, was he?
Yes.
I wanted Sleeping Beauty. Anyway,
we'll get that later.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, Rollo, look, can I just say it's wonderful to hear you at this hour of the night, Australian time, sounding completely and utterly relaxed and Well, sober. Even sober. I wouldn't say, yeah. Well, I'll say, all right, you can say sober, and I'll say sober too. You sound fantastic. So,
look, Rick, when it comes to people that I met online, you're one of the true blue Aussie sports, even though you are from, you know, sheep shagging town. What was that great comedian? He goes, how do you know if a New Zealand's, New Zealanders, burgled your house or something, love bites in your lamb roast. You know?
and we accept that. We accept that from you, Australian cunt.
What's got, hey, here you go, Rick. What's got six legs and runs around a paddock? You know the answer, yeah? A ram doing a yui. It's a classic. Yeah.
That's good.
It does sound like the John Laws station with this old music going on in the background.
Yeah. As Velocet's being very clever with his soundbite.
Nah, that's good.
I try my best.
Yeah, you're doing good. You do. Look, big shout out to Paul Bevan from 2NC. I reckon Velocet and Paul Bevan are the same person. They've got the same exact voice.
Paul Bevan.
Paul, don't say that here in Newcastle. You'll get lynched.
Well, lucky I'm not there. The video footage on YouTube of John Williamson's True Blue, and I'm watching the
John Williamson's. John Laws used to call John Williamson his brother. Cringy.
Little brother.
That's right. It was cringy as hell, wasn't it? Yeah. And he used to suck up to the truckers as well. He'd suck up to the truckers.
Suck them off if he had to.
Yes. in the truck stops. Poor Lawsy, I'll never live this down. 1300 suck off.
You blockhead. Get off my line, you piss off. You can piss off.
You can piss off.
Oh, you blockhead bastard.
That's what I was saying to Rick before. I should have said, hey, Lawsy, calm down with the radio thing. You're going to have an aneurysm. I wouldn't want him to die on air when I was talking to him. Because he did get a little angry, didn't he?
He did. He got really angry.
All I said is that it wasn't a lie. And he goes, that's a lie. That's a lot. And I'm going, calm down. No, I should have said.
You coward.
Yeah, coward. Yeah, I know. We'll let that go. Yeah. I'll tell you, Rick, and you, Velocet, I have tried to ring him back and they won't let me back on air. Yeah. Let me back.
And guess what?
You're going to try and call back in and I'll try to do something in the near future.
You can do it with your nice voice. I can easily Velocet's nice voice.
Yeah. It is a nice voice. It's a wonder to me how Velocet has only been behind the scenes, while Kyle Sandilands and those morons get in on the front stage, and Jackie O and that. Velocet. I mean, I guess you've had plenty of practice. Now you've got all the gear, right? So you're about to produce some pretty good stuff. Are you going to give us the heads up on? Like, or can you give us a little teaser on what you're about to do for Fakeologists, please?
He's going to sing.
Listen to the actual link I sent you. Have you gone to my SoundCloud link?
Okay, where's the link? Did you actually send it to me? Message?
No, I didn't send it to you. I have
to go, but it's been really nice talking to you guys. Yes, I do. I have to go.
I can't believe it's only 20 to midnight, to be honest.
Wow. It's only early, really, but I have to go. But it's really nice talking to you. Velocet, nice you to have the voice, and it's wonderful to hear someone your age has
Take three. Come on, Rick. Take three.
Here we go. Three, two, one. Here's Rick from Port Macquarie.
Freeform thought.
Yeah, freeform thought. Yeah. Freeform thought, yeah.
That's all I can appreciate. Say. Yeah, no, it's good and it's fantastic. So congratulations. That's all I can say.
All right.
Good night, guys.
So there goes Rick from Port Macquarie. And, so it's just me and Velocet. And who knows? We might get some Americans in if we hang on long enough. Will you play Sleeping Beauty for us? I know Ab doesn't particularly like music being played, but
I've got to go have a cigarette. And
yes, yeah.
If I can say so on air, I've got to take a piss and have a cigarette. So how about I meet you in the green room in 5, Rollo, and we'll have a little chat, and then we'll go back on air in 5 minutes.
Sure.
And I'm sure we'll bring, the best entertainment to the listeners.
We will. Possible. All right, man. Cheers. Cheers. Bye.
Eric 64. It was nice speaking to you, Rick.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
Boys.
Oh, Mom!
Now, hey there, people, won't you lend an ear? Cause I've a story to tell, and I'm telling it here. I was born in a town in the great UK. From a baby to a boy, to a man today. And I'm a musical man, and I'm a man of verse. But I got a little problem, and it's getting worse. My life was so well planned, surviving and adjusting in a funk band. Cause rapping is my bread and butter, but it's hard to rap when you're born with a stutter.
Well, no one's ever seen what I mean from the age of 13. Off in Northern and from a mountain to join with us in the
Well, it was 82 when I joined the boys.
And I was hip.
And I was cool.
But now I lost my poise. The kids are fans are starting to doubt. When you open your mouth and
nothing comes out.
And it breaks my heart that we're not on the chart.
Cause the record's nearly over when the vocals start.
And I'm down and out.
And I'm down on my luck.
And I'm living on my own and I'm dying.
For it.
Friends are saying,
you're great.
But I'm under the hammer. Cause all I seem to do is...
Well, no one's ever seen what I mean. From the age of 13, we've all been called in a mouth trap to join with us in the
Well, interviewers, turn away. Who wants to be covered with spray?
Talking to me
for more than an hour. It's equivalent to an April shower.
It's tough, tough.
Tougher than tough, it's worse than Benny Hill.
And that's bad enough.
Something must be wrong with your
vocal
technique.
When the 12-inch mix
goes on for a week.
I was rapping in my club the other night when nothing I said was coming out right.
The crowd got angry,
and this one man,
he was gonna throw a bottle,
he was gonna chuck a can. Chuck a can.
Chuck a can.
Well, no one's ever seen what I mean. From the age of 13, we've all been called in the
Why is that then?
Well, you'll make Mr. Whittaker at number 32.
Besides, it's not very good for the boys.
Not number 33.
Bit harsh, isn't it?
No! Sleep!
Your bedtime!
Talking of which, it's 10:30 already.
Ooh. What time do they stay up till in America?
Oh, very late. Sometimes 10:45.
Well, actually, I'm...
17 hours ahead.
No wonder they do all that shouting.
Yes, they must be very snappy and irritable.
That's right.
You know, I heard a story that those toasty boys stayed up till 12:15.
Well, that's really? Just silly. They're just going to get burnt out.
Burnt out.
Well, no one's ever seen what I mean. From the age of 13, we've all been called in the
Good evening and welcome. This is Velocet on the Fakeologist audio chat live stream. I'm joined by Rollo from Newcastle. Good evening, Rollo.
Good evening. It is now Sunday, the 22nd of April, 2018.
Right. 42 minutes past.
That's right. So we missed the top of the hour. We missed your the best audio grab ever that you did for Ab. But you're going to be doing You're going to be doing some more work for Ab soon. But let me just comment on that song.
I can't believe I came in earlier and missed completely the introduction, and then sponsorship promo came right over the top of me, and I was like, "What the fuck?"
That was very funny. So yes, anyone's listening back to this, the very beginning, yeah, we started right on the top of the hour, and then I should have said, "No, don't do it." And then I went, "Nah, fuck it, it's hilarious." That band there was obviously a piss take on Beastie Boys. The Beastie Boys.
Stutter Rap by Morris Minor and the Majors.
Yeah. Beastie Boys is, like my favorite song of theirs is Sabotage, because my goodness, isn't there in the world of alternative media, you can be sabotaged, can't you? There are people like Alex Jones, there are people like Jim Fetzer, there's people like, I don't know, Sophia Smallstorm. There are nuggets everywhere, but you got to know who you're talking to when it comes to alternative media. What do you think, Velocet? I mean, you're 27. You're only new to this game, but and yet old. You know what I mean?
I appreciate you saying that. I mean, I'd like to think that I have an old soul. Esoteric 65 recommended I play that track, and I have no idea why he recommended that or why I played it, but I know he'll be glad to hear it.
Hmm. My father always called it crap music, you know, crap, rap. Yeah. And, look, when it comes to rap music, I liked, who was the guy that did, this one's right for me. So everybody just follow me. You know, that one, what was that guy? Miles Mathis.
Miles Mathis.
Someone. Anyway, it was, you know what I mean? So I was never really into rap music. I was sort of into AC/DC, you know, lovely bands like, the Divinyls. So if at the end of tonight, if we don't get, any other callers, I'd love to hear Divinyl Sleeping Beauty. If you can cue
not
that one up.
Touch Myself?
No, Touch Myself. I always thought Touch Myself was, it was like, I like your old stuff better than your new stuff. You know what I mean? It was sort of the end of Chrissy Amphlett's career.
Like,
and
Chrissy Amphlett loved to perform without underwear.
She did.
Stool. Her legs during the performance.
That's right. And there's no denying that. There's nothing wrong with that. I've seen plenty of bands like the night Doc Neeson, you know, the lead singer of The Angels died. And watched John Stevens from Noiseworks play that night. And I went up to him and I asked him and I said, can you play, am I ever going to see your face again? And the band just went straight into it. And the whole, I was there it wasn't a pleasant night because some bastard threw a glass at John Stevens for no reason. I don't know why people do the idiotic things like that. And I was in the bathroom when that happened. So I didn't know. So I wanted to get a photo with him afterwards. And we're actually joined by Fakeologist himself. Fakeologist. Is he going to unmute?
Aberato.
But yeah, I'll just tell you the story. I wanted just to get a photo with John Stevens, but I didn't know that some asshole in the crowd had thrown a glass at him and hit him in the face. And at least he wasn't injured. So I thank God for that. When bands like the Angels, like Doc Neeson, you know, they're the true rock and rolls, and like I said, lovely to vinyls. What's her name again? It's Chrissy Amphlett.
Chrissy Amphlett.
What are you? Wear no undies and spread her legs. And like, she didn't mind. She didn't mind. It's a normal part of a woman's, what do you call it? It's what's between a woman's legs. So why not let the crowd see it?
How familiar with the angels are you?
I'll tell you this.
SFX64 the other night talking about Rose Tattoo and things like that. Rose Tattoo is one of my favorite bands. The Angels would be up there with Rose Tattoo easily.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you, when I went and saw the Angels, I think it was Dogs Are Talking, brought them back on the map, because they were big in the 70s, but the Dogs Are Talking. You remember the song? Dogs Are Talking. It was a massive hit.
I'm a few years younger than you, probably.
Well, I know. Well, look, I'm telling you, Dogs Are Talking. And then I went and saw them, do the lead up band to Guns N' Roses. And they were better than Guns N' Roses, in my opinion. Yeah, I thought they were better.
No doubt.
I did enjoy Guns N' Roses, but I really did enjoy Angels more at the Sydney Entertainment Center in, God, what was that? 1989, you know, way back.
Did you live in Newcastle or were you a Sydney person originally?
I got kicked out of home by my old man in 87. I moved to Sydney and lived in Sydney, for 4 or 5 years then I came back to Newcastle and, I've been here ever since. I love the place. Yeah. Yeah, I love the place. Yeah.
So your family from Newcastle originally?
No. My old man's from Ireland. My mum's from Birmingham. I was born in.
Where did you get kicked out of?
I just didn't get on with the old man, so.
No.
Yeah.
Where was did it. You get?
He just said, get the fuck out. So I did. Yeah,
where were you living at the time?
Taree.
You're up on the north coast.
Yeah.
Right, okay. That's all I was trying to gather, where you're from.
That's all it was.
So you got kicked out and moved down to Sydney, and that's where you saw the Angels.
Yeah, in 89. Yeah, in front of Guns N' Roses, so no one really wanted to see the Angels. And I thought the Angels, again, I'll say it again, I thought they were better than Guns N' Roses. Way better.
Back in my community radio days, I'm only 27 now, but when I first got started in radio, and this was back in 2008, I was 18 years old, my first radio show, all I did was play The Angels, bands like that. Like, I love that kind of stuff. And people didn't seem to get it. Like, yeah, my age group will listen to my show and they didn't seem to get where these bands were coming from. But I was like, man, like,
that's hilarious because you know what I did? You know what I did when I was on radio community? Do you know what I played? I played like bands like Angel of Death and songs like that because I was into death metal. You know, Metallica and Slayer and Heathen and bands like that. So, then I'd get the bakers ringing up saying, "Can you play some Michael Jackson, please?" And then I would. It was hilarious. So in the middle of all this death metal, you know, you'd get, you know, Beat It or something, which has got a pretty cool because that was, Beat It has who played on that track? Oh, that da-na-na-na-na-na. I think it was Van Halen. Van Halen played on that Beat It track. It was classic. Yeah. Anyway, that's the good old days. Yeah. You do sound like an FM guy that plays more music because I prefer talk radio myself.
What years were you in community radio?
86, 87. Yeah.
Well, for me, it was 2008, 2009 was my year.
I
was appealing to the mainstream masses on my local station.
It is. good stuff. I love it. Yeah. Yeah.
What do you make with Michael Jackson as far as the whole, you know, pedophile scandal and all the stuff he was involved with?
You really want to know? Okay. I think he was, I think he was put under the bus. And the real criminals, the real pedophiles, I would, and again, I don't mind, they can come and sue me and take all my money if they want. Steven Spielberg and people like, the guy that, George Lucas, they're your real pedos. The ones, I think Michael Jackson was a bit creepy because there was all his plastic surgery, but no, I think Spielberg and Lucas are your real nasty pieces of work. Mm. Yep.
From my personal experience, I can go through daily life and see teenagers living life to the max, right? I see people like teenage girls that are, you know, let's not say it here on Fakeology, but teenage girls that are really living it up. And I see guys that are doing the same thing. And I've got to wonder, you know, it was different from my upbringing, but I've got to wonder, like, maybe they are really enjoying themselves. And it's not so far to think that, you know, maybe that sort of innocence is lost theme.
Mm.
It's not so far from Michael Jackson's ideology that maybe he just appreciated or had a soft spot for the youth of yesteryear and could see that, you know. And I think he got really, yeah, you're right, thrown under the bus for that kind of ideology.
No, I think it's because he tried to expose them. The real problem with today's youth is everybody with smartphones and being addicted to Facebook or, I don't know, Facebook or whatever it is. I don't know, Twitter, I don't know. Just everybody being addicted to this thing. And, look, I don't mind talking to you, Velocette, here from time to time or to anyone on Fakeologist.com because I think we're here trying to help, but it's the youth that are just stuck. And I see it day in, day out, when I go and have a meal and I see young people and they're not talking to one another, they're just sitting on their phones. And what the fuck are they doing? What are they doing? Why aren't these young people, like, they're sitting at a table having a meal together, but they're not chatting together. They're just sitting there doing stuff with their phones. I don't know what they're doing. But, you know, there was this new game called Pokemon Go, I think it was called. And what it did is in real life, you could go and get, I don't know, treasures or something in this game, but you had to use your mobile phone to do it. And what it did is that my next door neighbor, Warren, and I love him to bits. These fucking strangers, I call them strangers, but these people come up in this beat up old car into our street and they walk up Warren's driveway and I'm going, and I know that they had no business being there. And I go, what the fuck are you doing here? Who are you? What the fuck are you doing here? And they're going, oh, we're playing Pokemon Go. There's a treasure up here. Up the back in his backyard, so it makes people go onto their private property.
If there ever was one.
Yeah, in America, you probably get your head blown off. Luckily, in Australia, like we've had a gun taken off us, you know. So I basically told him to fuck off and get the fuck out of here and don't ever come back. Yeah, you know, it's retarded. Like Anyway, I don't know, that Pokemon Go just seemed to be a fad and it's fucked off now, but it doesn't take away from my message. With my message is like, young people, look, while you get together and have a meal at a restaurant, why not talk to each other rather than talk to other people, text to other people on your mobile phones? I don't know. It's just, I'm old now. See, I'm 48 years old. See, Bella said, you're 27, you're still young, so enjoy it while you've got it, man. Yeah, fuck.
do that. I mean, I couldn't agree more wholeheartedly. Alex Jones's video, when Pokemon Go first came out, he was the one sporting a lot of those early videos that, you know, show how it maps the inside of your house and, you know, your cameras are being used to map the inside of your house.
Oh, dear, dear. Oh, yeah, the gay frog guy, Alex Jones, is that who you're talking about? Bill Cooper already told him he was a liar from the get-go. If it comes to paranoia, he's going to put paranoia. He says that they can listen to you on your, you know, where you plug your, into your walls and that there's microphones in. That guy's there as, go and listen to, Pac-Man. Pac-Man interviewed his ex-wife. He's an absolute fruitcake. Look, at least he can make us laugh. People make videos. Him being gay frog. Play the gay frog. Can you play the gay frog, clip now?
I can find classic. It for you.
But theoretically,
yeah.
What's to say that he, like, I've had this paranoid thought in the past. I've had paranoid delusions that really, like, what would stop people if the technology was out there? What would stop, for example, I own a Ford car.
Mm-hmm.
Stop Ford from theoretically dialing into that car and being able to control it, you know? Like, it's that kind of what we don't really know, we don't not know sort of attitude that leaves you to believe and leads to a lot of sort of paranoia that maybe things could be controlled, you know, that we're not so aware of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm a little skeptical when it comes to it. I mean, I don't know.
That's fine. It's fine to be skeptical. I mean, that's what being a fakeologist is all about. Yeah, being skeptical is not the same as being denial. You know, being skeptical, you know, being called a denier, like say I'm a, what do you call it, a Holocaust. I'm a skeptic of the Holocaust. No, I'm not. Now I'm a denier.
You should never mention the word Holocaust and denier in, you know, the same sentence.
Yeah, I shouldn't, should I? Yeah. Well, not if I'm going to be attacked. But I don't mind because I know I've been around long enough and I know how the Anti-Defamation League and Jewish Defense League works. Oh, here comes Ab.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Shitter using it. They've used it on our troops in Vietnam. They'd spray PCP on the troops, Jacob's Ladder. You think PCP, some horse tranquilizer, something? They got stuff that'll whack your brain permanently.
Yeah.
Special vaccines that are really nanotech that already re-engineer their brains.
Gay bomb.
Now there it is, the gay bomb. I mean, this is what they're. What do you think tap water is? It's a gay bomb, baby. And I'm not saying people didn't naturally have homosexual feelings. I'm not even getting into it, quite frankly. I mean, give me a break. You think I'm like, oh, shocked by it, so I'm up here bashing it because I don't like gay people? I don't like them putting chemicals in the water that turn the friggin' frogs gay. Do you understand that? It was crap. I'm sick of being social engineered. It's not funny.
It's not funny.
Come on, play the
friggin' frogs gay.
Come on, play the frogs gay song. Come on. It only goes for a minute. Go on. I just sent it to you.
Okay, yeah.
Come on, do it. The fakeologists will love it. Boom, 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 boom. Frogs gay.
In the water that turn the friggin' frogs gay. Do you understand that? Turn the friggin' frogs gay.
Do you understand that?
Gay. Frogs, friggin' frogs.
It's not friggin' frogs.
I'm gonna say it real slow for you. Gay. Won't you fight for your life? Frogs, friggin' frogs, I don't like a frog. Gay, friggin' frogs. Frogs! Friggin' frog crap! Won't you fight the frogs? It's not funny! I'm gonna say it real slow for you.
frogs.
I haven't seen that before.
It's a classic, isn't it? Yeah. And who do we have to thank for that? Make sure you thank whoever produced that. Yeah.
Boing.
Placebo or someone. I don't know. I forgot.
Placeboing.
Placeboing. Yeah. Here we go. Oh, Napoleon Wilson's just put something in the chat. What's he written? We've been shortlisted. Oh, Excellence in Radio Awards. What have we got here? This one looks like fun. What's this?
Excellence
in Radio Awards. Yeah, I haven't heard of Napoleon. Napoleon's had pancreatitis. He's been knocking around here at Fakeologist quite a while. Denny, we love him to bits, so hopefully Denny is on the mend. And, he's from Manchester.
Is there a reason he hasn't been here of late?
He's been crook. He's got pancreatitis or something. I don't know how exactly it's going, but let's just hope evening boys, he says. So he's listening. So, yeah. Yeah. We do love him to bits, and he's a no-nonsense too. You don't mess with Danny. He's a straight-up guy. Like if you want to know the truth, as well as Danny knows it, as well as any of us knows it. Come on, Velis, you got to remember, we only know the truth as all our life experiences tell us what the truth is. So basically, we know the media is lying. And you know how, what pussies they are. Like I rang Lawsy once. I'll give you an example. I rang John Laws once and they were calling Julia Gillard, Jew liar, right? Jew liar Gillard because they were calling her Jew liar. And I said, well, she's not a Jew. She was born in Wales. And I said, because most Jews are liars. And then Lawsy just went off his head and just went, that is so offensive. Oh, how dare you say all Jews are liars? I didn't say all Jews are liars. I said most of them are. He said all of them. He didn't say radio though. I still got that soundbite somewhere. Oh, dear, dear. Yeah, Lawsy. Lawsy's a classic. Who's the guy that really rings him and gives him curry? I forgot his name.
Norman.
Norman, yeah.
Norman's
I wish guy. I had Norman's ability. Apparently Norman used to work for him and do a lot of his sound work. And he was disenchanted, you know.
That long, to be honest. Like, that's not a relationship that comes easy.
No. Yeah. And he's got Dale, his the guy that's got trisomy on the 23rd chromosome. What's that disease called? Down syndrome, I think it's called. He's got Dale who goodbye Cobber. Hey Cobber, you know. So he does, you know, I can't have a go at Dale. How could you? Because he's got Down syndrome. But do you think Lawsy uses him a little bit to make him look nice?
Oh,
I don't know.
Be useful after the fact.
Yeah.
This is Danny. I thought I'd devote a song. This is Danny Kolk from Your Mind.
All right. Okay. Don't talk over it and let it play out. Come on.
Fakeologist.com.
All right.
Danny. It's a bit electro. It just had the name Danny in the title, so I thought it'd be appropriate. Okay, I've already had enough of that, sorry. Napoleon Wilson, I'm already sorry I played that.
go on at the time, am I? What matter is the present before I saw many people? So many people. I go on at the time, am I? What matter is the present before I saw many people? So many people.
Namesake, Danny Colk, played for Napoleon Wilson, of course. You're listening to the Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com, brought to you by Aberato. If you feel like donating to this cause, if you're a listener, and not a...
Yeah, donate. Yeah.
And donate an amount of your choice or $1.99 per month. And it's well spent, to be honest, Rollo.
I agree.
I don't know why that song.
I'll tell you a story. I was watching Jane Austen. It's a wonderful show called Pride and Prejudice. Have you ever heard of it?
And there's this
lovely character in it. Well, he's not lovely to start with. He's a total right royal bastard. His name's Darcy, right? And he becomes nice at the end. And I think that's what we all should do in our lives. We start off as bastards. And then we become nice in the end. I recommend any Fakeologist. I know it's a fiction novel. Jane Austen wrote it, in the 1800s or something.
But worth checking out.
It's well worth checking out because, when people think you're a bastard, like first impressions, you might think Darcy, when you meet him, if you ever met him, would be a bastard, but then he, in the novel, afterwards, he turns out to be a real nice guy. Yeah, so
Be a real nice guy.
Yeah, absolutely, guaranteed. So I thought I'd have to say that because there are some Darcys that we've met in these. In our life. You think of bastards, but they turn out to be really good guys in the end. Yeah,
I'm sure. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's well worth. I'm not a big reader, but I did watch the BBC production of it, and it was well done. It was a well done production. So yeah, but, when it comes to Fakeologists, there are some Fakeologists that you just think, are they good? And then at the end of the day, they turn out to be great. And there's some that don't. I think I turned out to be great. What about you, Velocet? Do you think I turned out to be good? What about Napoleon Wilson? No, he's just a poof. I don't care if he's got pancreatitis; he's still a poof.
Why is he not here?
He's pancreatitis. Yeah, he's listening. He's listening. He's typing into the comments. He's a great guy.
Yeah, he's very with it.
Oh, there's so many people I've met here, like Delquar and other people, like Kyle. What's he called? Not So Freemason. And even over at Hoaxbusters, like Chris Kendall, great guys, just fantastic. You just can't beat real people. And especially talking about the subject we're talking about, which is media fakery, exposing media fakery one psyop at a time. We know how bad the media fakes, and it can get on top of you. And if you can do it in a lighthearted way, which is what I try to do, and what do you call it? and just what do you call it? Compartmentalize your mind and not think about it all the time, because it will be debilitating. And if you don't do it that way, you're cool. As long as you understand that, you know, that the psyops, they're big ones. Like, your thoughts on Sandy Hook. How could Robbie Parker have a 2-year-old that was killed, the day before, and then come out laughing and then go into cry mode? How is that believable? It's just not.
Allow me to speak to the heart from the heart.
Go for it.
This experience of waking up to these truths, it has not been easy. It's not been easy for me. I'm 27 years old. It can be scary at times. It really can. Because that most of the people around you are not willing to see things the way you do. And no matter how much you reach out, no matter how much you make the point, and no matter how much you give them good evidence, things seem to be the way you hope for them to be. You do not want to believe it. And you become somewhat isolated. Friends that understand what you're talking about. And then you find people online, Fakeologists. Like, I mean, you might have got into it through YouTube or whatever, but you can find places like Fakeologist.com or All or Clues Forum or whatever it might be your, you know, website of choice. Realize those people are thinking of what you seem to believe. And although you may not agree with everything they seem to say, and although there might be people out there who accuse you of weird things and, you know, people who don't agree with you, it doesn't matter. People that seem to see the big things that you see. Rewarding when you actually find this crowd that agree with what you're saying. Someone like myself who's 27 years old and, is reaching out and looking for people that agree, see things the way I see. It can be very rewarding to become involved with a community like this. So, people like yourself, Wilson, who's sitting there listening to us, doing our little show, people that can agree with what we have to say. It's good. Really, like, what else have we got? And the mainstream media start agreeing with you out of nowhere. You're not going to have people in, you know, the world around you agreeing with you all of a sudden. It just doesn't happen. Here, you're somewhat alone, you know? When you can, kick back, turn into Sunday mornings and other time periods around the world, people that can agree with what you're saying, people that get what you're coming from. Don't you think, Rollo?
Yeah, I never know when you're going rhetorical or answer. You know what I mean?
But, you know, that's my nature. it was half monologue.
You do this slow, Yeah, yeah. You do this slow thing and you go, should I answer? Not. Or is it a rhetorical question? I don't know. No, you're a classic. Yeah.
But we did get a reply from Napoleon Wilson. He replied to me, so I'm glad to hear he's listening. That was a song especially for him, so I'm glad he's listening and enjoying it. And honestly, I hope that in the next few weeks, let me just extrapolate from that point. I first got involved with Fakeologist about 6 months ago. I did my first interview with Ab when I, became, aware of the channels, and I did an interview with Ab. Hey, how you going? Blah, blah, blah. This is who I am, etc. Break from it shortly after that. So I haven't been as involved in recent history. But you're well aware that my background is in, radio broadcasting, etc., etc. So for the foreseeable future, I hope to be involved here quite a bit. There's a few things, a few ideas I've got in my head that I'd like to get out. And not that it really furthers the cause, so to speak, but more so just that you become disenfranchised with the mainstream media. I mean, I worked in mainstream media. You become very disenfranchised with the things they do, the things they say, and you sort of, like, I've got all these skills, audio skills, video skills, et cetera, et cetera, and you want an outlet for that. And become disenfranchised with what the mainstream media had to offer. So I'm here to, in the near future. So hopefully with Ab's permission, there'll be a bit I can do on the channels and a bit I can be involved with as far as Fakeologist 55 and things like that, chatting to people like Napoleon Wilson and yourself.
Yeah, he's a great guy to chat to. And I spoke to Napoleon plenty of times. And I actually spoke to him when I spoke to, when I interviewed Jesse War. You might remember that interview. It was somewhat controversial.
Let me just say, Rollo, while I can, the interview with Jesse War, man, did you receive flack for that? Wow.
A little bit.
Guy doesn't seem to have much of a backstory as far as 9/11 is concerned. And you call him on it. You were the one guy there actually questioning things and asking him about specifics, and he didn't seem to have much of an answer. A guy that just appears on the internet and seems to have so much information regarding the new Cokes, but should it come to 9/11 and things he said he was involved with, not so much information. No. And I think you were one of the key players to actually point that out and, pull it out of him. And most people don't seem to recognize that.
Yeah. And don't forget, there was years ago, there was Simon Shack and they spoke to a jazz musician that was doing the same thing and said he was there. And it seemed to be, it was dodgy as well. We didn't get... you'd have to go back through the audio archives on fakeologist.com. There was this jazz musician that said he was there in Lower Manhattan at the same time, exactly the same as Jesse War was saying. And I was just asking, what did you see? The same as those guys asked this jazz musician, and he seemed a bit flaky on the answers. You know what I mean? It's just like... Like you were there. All right. Okay. So you were there at this point. What could you see? Okay. That's just, all right. Okay. So you saw, yeah, I know what I saw on television. What we all saw on television, but if you were there, let's just stick to what did you see? And that's kind of where I'm not a hard hitting, no experience really in reporting, but I just thought, if I've got the opportunity, why not take it? If you've got the opportunity, it's something in life. If you've got the opportunity, why not take it and go for it? Yeah, and don't pussy around it either. Yeah,
no, you did an excellent job of taking the opportunity. I can say, how much experience do you have with journalism and things like that?
Absolutely none. I'm trained in IT. I'm a computer guy.
We'll have to speak about that behind the scenes, but, as far as media is concerned, if you have very little experience, then you did an excellent job to take it and run with it and point out the things that you did, because I think you sort of poked a lot of little holes in his stories.
Yeah. I mean, all right, okay. I was nervous when I was with John Laws and he called me a blockheaded bastard because I'm nervous when I'm talking to that guy because I know that guy's
bastard. Rollo. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I failed on that. Maybe I succeeded in a funny sort of way, but I thought I failed. But, anyway.
You succeeded.
Yeah, well, at least I didn't give him a heart attack on air.
Really not talking to him.
Yeah, it was all right. It's all right. Look, you can't offend me.
I think you need to imagine this frail old guy sitting in a radio station boardroom just doing his little show. I don't think you'd be as nervous as you might think.
That's what Jesse War said. He felt nervous talking to me, and a few other people have said they felt nervous talking to me. I think I spoke to a lovely guy from Honolulu called Pono Ku, and he said, I'm nervous. And I go, well, what are you nervous about? There's nothing to be nervous about. I mean, fakeologist.com, we don't get massive listenership. We might get like 200 or 300 listens a month. I don't know what the actual figures are, but they're not massive, so... But what you do get here is the truth, and a lot of cleverer people than the most of the crap you get on the internet. It's just, all right, you can talk all day about how crap The Last Jedi was if you want, or whatever, you know, whatever specific topic it is, we hear, supposing media fakery one side of it at a time. And that's, and there are a lot cleverer people, come on here and chat. There are musicians that come in, Tom Dalper, you know, you got your SMJs, your Ab himself, who, as we know, is, and plenty of other people, that are interested in how deceptive and duplicitous and disgusting liars, the mainstream media is. And people like Faye. Faye grilled me on, are you an anti-Semite? No, I'm not an anti-Semite, but the Jews do control the media. And that's why, if you ever see a Jewish story, especially in, when they're attacking Lebanon or bloody, the Palestinians, dropping white phosphorus on them or whatever, they always call themselves soldiers, and they always call, you know, the Lebanese or, the Palestinians, militants or terrorists, whatever, because that's the Jewish media. It doesn't matter if it's ABC or SBS or 10, 9, 7. They're always backing Israel. And look at how that Mike Pence, I watched him, an interview with him the other day. Is he the vice president now? And the way he says, we will always, we're not here to sort of try and make peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis. Nah, we're going to back Israel big time. And these yarmulke-wearing motherfuckers, that's America has been taken over by the Jews. It has.
Yeah, but why are you buying into the dialectic? Like,
because the Jews always make themselves out to be goddamn victims. And this whole 6 million Jews died in this Holocaust, and the reparations that bloody Germany has had to pay back for a lie, a goddamn lie. There is absolutely no way that why the hell did the bloody video footage get lost for Auschwitz and the memory of the camps? You know why? Because it didn't fit the goddamn propaganda narrative that helped the Jews. I'm telling you, these people, I'm not saying all Jews. I'm saying the top ones. Your Netanyahu's, your Michael Bolton. God damn, he's just this crappy singer. John Bolton is Michael Bolton. Am I going to start singing? I thought I love you, but I lied or something. No. These really nasty pieces of work. I'm talking about the top Jews. I'm talking your Benjamin Netanyahu types. They're the ones that I can't stand, because they're the ones that are really, really nasty. That Paul's nightclub, definitely a hoax. He's there going, oh, my thoughts and prayers are all for all the gays, and now we must kill everyone else or something. You know, it's just like, kill, kill, kill. And I just posted, I posted a video on BitChute, because it won't be played on YouTube. BitChute is John Bolton. Yeah, John Bolton, yeah. So anyway, that's all. I'm not an anti-Semite. I just think the Jews have just got too much power, the top Jews, and they feel like they say they're victims, but they're not. They're the aggressors. Dropping white phosphorus on men, women, and children in Gaza Strip it's just not right. And they need to be exposed. And like I said, I can't be bargained with. I can't be reasoned with unless they start telling the truth. You know, I don't feel pity or remorse, and I absolutely will not stop until the Jewish mainstream media stops lying.
You're buying into the war dialectic, unfortunately.
Well, there is no war. War's a fake.
No one said that. No one
Someone said. All right. Okay. I've got to go. Hey, it's been lovely to talk to you, Velocet. Hey,
I have memories of as a child going to a Michael Bolton concert. You gotta live this.
Really?
You gotta
there, 4 years old.
Look at that hair.
Yeah. Well, would you do me a favor? I've got to go because my wife's screaming at me because I've got to go to bed. Would you play Sleeping Beauty by the Vinyls? Would you go out with Sleeping Beauty by the Vinyls for me?
What was wrong with I Touch Myself?
No, I don't. Please. Sleeping Beauty. Not I Touch Myself, please.
I'll get it on.
And I look forward. I look forward to listening to you with Ab doing Radio 55 next Wednesday.
I can't believe I got thrown into that. It was.
You're gonna do a fine. You're gonna do fine. Yeah, you'll be fine.
I appreciate.
I know you think I'm gonna do fine, but Faye, that's the first time I've spoken to Faye, and she was like, "Oh, you should do 55," and I was like,
"Yeah,
I've had a few too many Black Russians." I'm like, "Okay, yeah, I'll do.
You'll be fine." 55.
And I'm gonna have to brush up on the week's conspiracy theories to be up to date on it.
Well, don't use the word conspiracy theories because I don't like that term at all.
Does it all disservice? Yes, I know.
Yes. So you're not conspiracy theories because you'll be fine. Just as long as you talk frankly, succinctly, and you know what you're talking about, all you need is three topics, because 55 minutes, I told you, will go in no time at all. And Ab does most of the talking anyway. Because Ab's a gabber. You know, he's a gabbler. You can't stop him. Once you get him started, you can't get a word in edgewise.
I had to shut up and listen to him.
That's it. I've spoken to him for 6 years, and he's a nice gabbler too. He won't hurt you. Sleeping Beauty. If you can go out with that, I'll have to love you and leave you, Bella. So it's been lovely to talk to you tonight. And
that's okay.
And my big love to Rick and Faye, who we spoke to earlier in the green room. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Rick was there earlier on, and Faye.
Yeah.
In room 11 to have a little chat. But to take us out tonight, I'm going to have to do this the rest of this alone. So unless Napoleon wants to join me with his sore throat, I've got no other choice but to go it alone.
No.
Well, it's Chrissy Amphlett, who used to, perform with no underwear and flash her vag on a stool, apparently. We'll be happy. Have a good evening, Rollo. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. It's the whole thing of international broadcast. You don't know what time people are listening to stuff on demand. I mean, it is a podcast as well. You're listening to the Fakeologist audio chat on fakeologist.com. My name is Bellaset, and I'm joined this morning, my time, and this evening, his time, by the infamous Dave J. Hey, Dave.
How are you doing? Good to be here.
Doing very well. How are you?
Excellent. Sorry, I was just drinking a root beer, which I had picked up at the hardware store earlier.
Root beer from the hardware store?
Yeah, the hardware store. They always sell root beer there for some reason. All different kind of brands that you don't normally see. You know, so I always like to try different brands from different places.
I guess they've kind of got their market cornered, haven't they? Like, I mean, the hardware store is the kind of place you might expect someone who wants to drink root beer, so... Interestingly, our hardware stores here, we've got, like, in Australia, we have a big chain. I'm not going to mention the name, but we have a big chain hardware store owned by a giant international conglomerate. And they're famous for selling sausage sandwiches.
Interesting.
What they actually do, they have, like, fundraisers. So local community organizations can actually erect their little sausage sandwich stall out the front of the hardware store. So all over Australia, no matter, you know, every Saturday you can go to your local hardware store and you know there's going to be a sausage sandwich there. And I think quite often the thing is to get one on the way in and get one on the way out.
Yeah, interesting.
They probably should add root beer to the menu. It wouldn't go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Has anyone ever told you to sound like Norm MacDonald? Are you familiar with Norm MacDonald, the comedian?
I am, actually, but no, I've never heard that I sound like him.
Just, because I'm an Australian, maybe the American accent fools me. I don't know. I'm quite a fan of his. I enjoy his comedy, and you sound a bit like him. I need to get a clip of him so we can compare.
Right.
we can A and B.
Absolutely. Yeah, the interesting thing, I guess, is that growing up in California, you tend to run into people from all over. So then you pick up different accents, and then, of course, being in the Navy for 10 years, you also deal with people from all over. And then, of course, living with overseas where you're using, English is a second language and you're trying to communicate with English in another language, you tend to consolidate usage of words and hyphenate words differently. So it's kind of an interesting mix.
I'm speaking to a non-English speaker. I tend to... Like, I mean, you know how we all have that idea of what English sounds like to a foreigner? We sort of have that sort of broken, stupid English that, we expect foreigners to speak. I find I sort of adapt that. I speak sort of in a simplistic, where I exclude a lot of words that I don't think make sense to that person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Take on that role and just start adapting, you know. Anyway, I just... basically, maybe we'll be here for about an hour. I was just aiming to cover a few topics that sort of come up of the Fakeologist audio calls you've been on. But to start off with, I wanted to get an idea of your background, because if I can explain, like, I got involved with this whole sort of truther alternative conspiracy realm about 2 years ago. I was working in commercial broadcasting. And once I started to realize a lot of these things in 2015, 2016, it freaked me out quite a bit. And I ended up leaving my job and sort of started to really rethink my life. I feel now that I'm starting to hear voices like your own, I started to realize I'm quite sheltered. Like I was living in sort of one little corner of this online community where I was exposed to certain people on YouTube. Wider, a lot more people out there that I hadn't heard of. And so I've only really become aware of you in the last few months since you've reappeared on Fakeologist. But I wasn't aware that you were, I wasn't aware of you years ago when you were doing most of your work on YouTube and things like that. So can you give me a bit of background when you first sort of became aware of this stuff and when you started putting out your work?
On YouTube, I started back in 2009. Different. My main discussion at first was the moon is a light, and what are called stars and planets were nothing more than just lights in the sky. And I was trying to explain to people that it's nothing more than a light show that is used continually, used and has been used for times and seasons. It's really just a calendar in the sky. They're not destinations, and so-called space travel is, of course, as presented, a hoax, obviously. So, but that was let's just say, an evolution of my experience, my earliest experiences with the moon landing hoax. I knew from my earliest memory. In fact, walking past my dad, who's laying on the ground watching this, before they'd only show you a few short, clips, and then the same clip over and over of the jumping off the little ladder thing. And I told him at the time, I said, that's not real, that's fake. And he said, the normal reaction, no, they landed on the moon, it's real. And I said, no, it just wasn't true. So let me just kind of jump to the quick on that. And going through second grade, I made a point of saying that I didn't believe it was true and that my understanding of what they said war was and what war constituted on a larger scale was not as presented, because I had an issue with the so-called Revolutionary War and so different understandings like that. And I was made to repeat the second grade because I wouldn't conform to the curriculum, is what I was told. So what I quickly learned was that I would just have to repeat the spell, and the spell is nothing more than words and dates. You understand in school you have to remember a lot of numbers. It's date. What date did this happen? Yeah. That. So I quickly realized that if I can just recall the dates and the numbers, which make numbers very important, which I later talk about later in my life, then I could repeat the spell back. And then, of course, if I repeat the spell back properly, then I pass the test. But none of that required me to actually believe it and to accept it into my person as being a truth to live by, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. It's interesting you sort of were aware of this stuff so young. Like, I mean, I can only speak from my experience. Up until a few years ago, I was completely under the spell. I'd never, you know, like everything seemed correct to me. It made sense, you know, the world. And I think it was sort of, you know, a very dark place. You know, like it's kind of like you've got to sort of hit rock bottom, you know that saying? It felt like, for me, becoming aware of a lot of this stuff, you needed to become somewhat disenfranchised with the whole system you were living in to become aware of it. But I always find it interesting when people talk about how they were aware of this stuff at such a young age, you know, because I can only speak from my experience. But to see the moon landings, you know, as a child and not accept it, or then even jump to the war hoax, I mean, that's... war, because it's weird that so many people in this community can be debating the shape of the earth and stuff, which you would think is one of the most, you know, misdirections out there. But when it comes to things like war, things they've seen on the TV that they hold so close, that seems to really get them agitated. The fact that people might not have died in a war, you know, that really gets people riled up. But they're happy, maybe just because of the novelty of it, to debate the shape of the earth.
It's interesting about that, because even with the shape of the earth, which is, and this is my definition, because I like to define things through experimentation and through my actual work. I'm one of those that say, you know, you need to study and then you show yourself approved, meaning that your work will show its own proof. And it can be tested by anybody, and the results will be the same. So the so-called Earth is from sea level, and what I call sea level, which brings in the importance of the number 33. It's very because that's the sea, or the third letter, the idea of the CC. So then from the sea level, where you see SEE and the SEA, so that's your CC. There's two different Cs there. The sea with your eyes, and then the sea level. From sea level, that there is deviations or elevation. That's it.
It's interesting that you talk about the numbers and the double meaning of sea. Like, I mean, most people who hear you talk, I would say, aren't listening too closely or are a bit confounded, not too sure of the kind of thing you're talking about when you go on with the numbers and that. And I know, I find it hard to follow sometimes. How long have you been sort of involved with the numerology behind things, and how much research have you done into that to be able to sort of repeat it back or know or see the numbers, you know, in all these kind of events that are purported as real?
Okay, well, that goes back to recalling why I was uncomfortable with, and they were always pushing numbers. You had to know the date. You had to know the age. You had to know what in the procession of characters, what number this character fell into the scheme of things. So while I knew things were amiss, I didn't put it all together till later in life. And that is where you were speaking about earlier, where it's at the low point. And that would have been, you know, just after 2009, probably in the 2010 time frame, where I had this whole experience and I was explaining these hoaxes, and but there was still a gray area, meaning that I was seeing things, but I was seeing it through a fog. I wasn't able to put the final period on this stuff. And through intervention, and I call it, you know, spiritual revelation, which is the revealing of a truth, all right? So then I was physically done, meaning that I was emotionally done, physically done. I wanted to die. I wanted to live. So then I understand a lot of people have so-called religion, as do I, because I don't go to church and I'm not a part of a religious group. However, I spoke with Jesus Christ, and I said, if you're real, spirit, the light, the Christ, and by Christ, the meaning of Christ is light or information, the truth, the idea, or knowledge. If you are true and if what you're offering is truth, then prove it to me. Otherwise, I'm done. I'm checking out. I'm gonna end it. And then through that same night, through spiritual revelation is the best way I can explain it to, through an internal light, which is brighter than any, you know, light that, you know, bulb or anything like that. I just was given, which then I was able to, look into anything and see the source code of it. So I was able to then look at numbers, and numbers are reduced 1 through 9. The 10 is nothing more than an IO or a return back to 1, which is where your 9/11 comes from. And this is where I don't want to confuse you, because people can get confused on this. When you reach...
Yeah, can I just interject for a second and
sure.
clarify? The 10 itself, is it the 1, or is it the return to 1? So it's not the 1 in itself, is it? Of return to 1?
It's a 1-0. So in order, if left alone, it stays by itself. It doesn't go any farther. If you then become, if you allow yourself turned, or you give it life, you add that extra 1, turn the 0 into a 1, just like a bit, just like turning on the bit. So it becomes 9-1-1. That's your 9/11. All right. Now, if you leave it at 1-0, so if you, let's just put it into context. If they put out a hoax story, you see the hoax story and you understand it to be a hoax, you do not participate in that hoax. So that bit has never changed. It remains a 0. So therefore you dismiss it from your mind as being an untruth. Yeah. Therefore you don't bother yourself with it. However, if you concern yourself with it, if you concern yourself and consider it to be truthful, hold on.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
I just wanted to go back to where I was.
Please continue. It was very, very interesting.
Yeah. So let's go back to that, the understanding of concern. So now you've concerned yourself with that story, meaning that you find some credence to it. So then you turn that bit from 0 to 1, meaning that you are led back into the cycle, i.e. the snake eating its tail. Tail meaning story. All right.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
Okay. So you're 9/11. 9-1-1-2-3-4-5-6-7-8-9-1-1. So the 9-1-1 or the 9/11 symbology, temples, your left and right temple, which is why they call them temples. Your left and right side is a temple. Your mind comes crashing down and it's replaced with a lie. All right. So now you're off to the races. Now you are going to search for details that reinforce that building of that new temple within your mind. So now you become your own worst enemy, all right?
So it's if I can reiterate what you're saying and check I'm on the right track here, right. It's kind of like at every moment in life where there's like a binary decision to be made, and we can either continue to feed into the narrative we're being presented, or we can break away from it. So that's the choice we're presented with at every
Absolutely.
Moment. Is that kind of the idea?
Absolutely.
What's the significance of 9 before the 10 and 11?
The understanding of 9 is, so you have 3, 6, 9. So you have 3 different levels. You have the 1 and the 2. So you have a spark or a light, an idea. All right. Then the 2 is you recognizing that light, meaning that you show concern or you see it or you recognize it as being a light. The 3 is the first number used to create a ring, or to bring those back together. All right. So then that's your first ring. All right. Then the 4, 5, and 6. And now I'm going to speak in the understanding of where language comes from. And for lack of a better term, it comes from what's referred to, and I put it in quotes, as Phoenician. meaning that the English and the Hebrew and the Aramaic and all those will be rooted in what's called the Phoenician. So then within that, your four or your, the next rung up is called your dalet or your door. So then if your bell was rung, if your mind was rung, you know, that rings true. You know, you've heard that saying, oh, that rings true to me. Oh, yeah. So if that rings true to you, then you go through the door, right? So you're through the four. The five is your senses. Now that your senses are now involved with that story, you went through the door. Now your five senses, you are the man. You've seen it in the pentagram who's hanging. So you're hanging within the structure of that story. Because that is now what's guiding you. Because your body doesn't do its own thing. Your body goes where your mind leads it. All right. So then you're being led. So you're into the six. Now the six, you have to understand what a cube is. An idea is a contained thought, and that contained thought has information, details, structure. Now a cube, or you know, think of a Rubik's cube or any type of cube, has six sides and eight corners. 68. Now, between the 6 and the 8 is what's called the 7, or the Zion. So you've heard of Return to Zion. It's big in, you know, movies. It's also in the Bible. That it's spoken about returning to Zion, or returning to mind, or brought to mind, even in a simple saying. Let me bring back to your memory, or let me remind you. Right? That represents the 7. So then that, if you take 4 sevens, another understanding of the 11, 7 times 7 plus 4 is 11. So in order to hold that structure, that cube open, you have what's called the swastika, or the sun symbol, which sort of lights that encapsulated idea or cube, right? So then that's where the sun symbol comes from. That's where the sun sign comes from, or the swastika, because the swastika is nothing more than 4 sevens put together. Your mind right now. Okay, so then, and now what happens outside of that, and then what latches that together is the 9. Because if I do a 6 and a 9, you know, there's a saying, and it's one of these sim characters, Tesla, which said if you understand 3, 6, 9, you understand the universe, is the single verse or the single group of words, right? Not the universe, not stars and all that nonsense that they put out.
That's what summons went out. When we think of universe, we imagine all that there is, but we don't think about singularity, do we?
So you're speaking about the universe, and a verse is what? A set of words, all right? So then if you are brought into that universe, and that universe can be any one of these stories, then your 6-9 is going to be the interlinking, okay? So the 9 is also called the Tet. Information. Let's say the Tet or the Tet Offensive with the Vietnam, and make sure you understood I said Vietnam War. The Tet Offensive was one of those stories that was used to bring people to bring currency into that, to allow people to feel motivated as a reason into believing that as a place that needs to be to go into, let's say. We need to be there because remember the Tet Offensive. Well, that the Tet is nothing new. A Tet is the idea of a mind, all right, being brought back into the 101 idea, or the idea of the elementary. So if your mind can be brought into the IO, the input output, you're going to return back to the loop, and the idea of 69. You can put those together in your memory or in your mental image, and you see that if you overlay those, it becomes the 8, or the idea of the infinity loop. So all of these numbers, 1 through 9, it's the encapsulation, or it's the way that an idea is grown. If you can think of it organically, it's the way that an idea from its foundation or its first say instance that it's shown to you to its blossom at the 9. And if you believe that, then it's brought back into, it's brought to life. You bring it to life within you, and then you live as if it's real. So you have to understand how numbers stories, and new stories will use the 7, or what I call the Zion code, to introduce a story to you, because that's what needs to fill that initial cube I talked to you about. You, the person who's observing the story, 4 or 5, all right? You're all those put together, because that is all within you.
Like the building blocks to the final blossom at 9, and then we get to 10, and 11 is the belief and the return into the same story again.
Get to 9, and that's the mind. Are you going to bring? Are you going to give it a home? Are you going to give it a place to rest? If you do, you turn on that bit, and you become 9/11. It crashes down. You give your temples is where you house that it becomes a truth to you. In fact, nothing more than a religion. It's a belief, all right? So then that is given to a house and within your temple to it, meaning that when you go to look for details or additional stories, or when you observe remembrances of it, that event or that hoax has its own little place within your temple where you go to, and then you give it power. And the power over you is the idea of bringing you into mourning, most likely. With all these stories, it's usually trying to bring you into witnessing of death, which is a big thing in this place we call a society. They want you to be in a state of mourning or death, which is why...
On that topic, if you'll just allow me to play... this is you on Fakeologist number 452. I'm just going to reference a clip.
This is one thing you'll find out. I don't come into a room and dish death out, period, at all. I don't I don't share stories with you, personal experiences, because I'm not here to bring you down. I'm not here to listen to me bring you down. I would like to talk to you about things that would lift you up and to make your mind, make you think about other things that you might not have thought about before.
Sure.
However, that most of the time and most of the people you deal with in this life, in this so-called life, downward trajectory, meaning that they are going down, they want to take you down with them. And it's always a constant race to the pit.
So everything we're told does seem to be that way, that it's putting us in this mode of sorrow and death and all that kind of stuff. Right. What do you think is the motive behind that? Why is it that way, and why... is it our, you know, why do we break away from that and try to see things differently?
Why is that? That really goes into the minutiae of the control grid. And if you control one's mind through sorrow or through mourning, then you can do, as far as so-called freedoms and things like that. I don't even deal with even kind of the government side of things and the law side of things, because I understand I live in a place and then I live by the laws of the land, but I don't participate in any of the discussion of it, because it doesn't affect me, because I'm not going to go out and hurt anybody, and so I will never run afoul of the law, if that makes any sense. So I don't worry myself about that. But if you can keep a population in fear of their own life, they will give extraordinary power to those who control governments. They will give them extraordinary power of control through monetary policy, through policing policy. So at the end of the day, it can boil down to an emotional end result, which is greed, and then a in-the-pocket motivation, which is nothing more than lucre or mammon or money. You can either serve the truth or you can serve mammon, right? That's it. That's all you do.
There are certain corners of the internet and a lot, within this sort of wider truther community, there seems to be a lot of vitriol and sort of hate for lawmakers and things like that. But as John Le Bon once sort of pointed out to me, he said, what exactly is it you want to be doing that the law is stopping you from doing? And I had to think about that and go, well, yeah, on a day-to-day basis, for the most part, a lot of the laws, in my country are really just sort of do unto others. It's pretty simple stuff that we wouldn't really want to do anyway. So, the idea, it's more just that we don't like being told that there are rules or like, these aren't things you want to do anyway. You just don't like being told that there are rules around you,
Right, right. Well, I agree. It's, I think I heard him say, something similar one time, and I tend to agree. It's, like I say, I don't get involved with politics. I don't vote. I don't do any of that stuff. Because it's not, that's not my purview. That's, I have nothing to do with it because I, like I say, those people have nothing to do with me. Right? They're going to do what they do regardless because to me, it's all a big scam. Right? They're characters in a play. The character that is put into office is the character that's needed at that time to push along an agenda that's already predetermined. The script's already been written. Right, so they're just going to put the characters into place that best suit that part of the script that goes through. And that's why you have the left and the right, the yin and the yang, the idea of the sine wave, up and down. And everything, I've tried to explain this as well, that everything is numbers. And everything is a sine wave. You get up, all right, it goes right, it goes left. You go conservative, liberal, whatever the terms are. You went to sleep at a certain time. You got up at a certain time. Numbers can be used for every aspect of life. So you have to understand, how many steps did it take you to the door? If you had to, you could count all of that. So everything could be, you know, reduced to a number. So powerful. And that they can be used. If I take a truth and I mirror it, and here's where the importance of knowing how this, what I call the schematic of this system is. If you understand that a truth mirrored is going to look exactly the same, just reverse and opposite, then if you don't recognize the number code being used, then you're going to be fooled by it. So it's very easy to be fooled by a mirrored image because guess what? They only need the lie to appear logical. Logical because it's a reflection of something that is.
Now, I think I heard you recently say that everything's been done before. And what that summoned in my, and the fact that we know, you know, they put up these twin towers 33 years before, it's all preordained. It's all very, well planned and quite sort of brilliant in its overarching, narrative. But the idea that everything's already been done before, it's easy to sort of get off on this tangent of this spirituality or, you know, multiple universe kind of theory. Do you think it's more a fact of sort of a human plot line that's being developed when things are repeating or have been done before?
Yeah, I'm guessing if I understand your question right, a lot of it is due to free time. In fact, people having the free time to engage in kind of the science fiction of their own mind. So when you have the free time, if you've free time and you're not doing real work, which is real investigation to understand the surroundings you live in and the ground you walk on, if you're not doing that, then you're left free time to imagine. And imagination, you know, anything's possible. You can create all kinds of different universes to explain things. But a lot of that stems from that person not having a foundation. All right, for who they are or what their truth is. They've done no work. Therefore, they are led down, you know, different paths and they're easily, manipulated into believing all these different, when offered the truth and when shown the truth of this place, it can be a lonely experience, meaning that the more you understand the truth of this place and the more you express the truth of it, the lonelier you're going to be as far as interaction because most people don't want to understand the schematics of the place. They want it to remain a mystery because if they knew the truth, they would have to tell the truth. When I try to explain the schematics of this place and how to understand it each and every time and not be fooled again, crickets. Nobody wants to hear it, all right? Because once they do hear that, they will be responsible. And nobody wants to be responsible. When I say nobody, it's very few, right? Wants to be responsible for telling us the truth.
I'll just play some of your thoughts on the foundation.
Most people are still stuck in this mental prison where they will understand something isn't true. It's not being presented truthfully, and they won't take the time to actually investigate it down to okay, if this is a lie, then continue to the next foundation.
I think that's what we don't seem to acknowledge often enough is that pointing the finger at governments and all these boogeymen, and you've said yourself, like once you realize, you know, that war's fake and it's all this false narrative, then it only leaves you to deal with sort of the day-to-day person on the street, you know, the mugger on the street's really your only concern in life.
But yeah, you know what? I don't even concern myself with that, to be quite honest with you.
I've got no personal experience to think that there's anything necessarily evil going to happen to me when I step out my front door. But
no concern about, yeah. So I don't worry if somebody does and something were to happen, then that just is what is meant to be. But I did want to explain one addition to what you said about war. And a lot of people would hear war is fake and confuse that with what I say is war is a hoax. And it's controlled demolition and strategic relocation, meaning that people go places, people are shipped off to places. All this happens, you know, the logistics happen. However, there's not armies shooting at each other from across fields. Well-planned play. It's a ballet of sorts.
Yeah. All right. I should be careful to try and use the word hoax in future because I know, yeah, like fake it. It's easy on fakeologists to sort of keep using the word fake, and it does conjure up the wrong image. But I certainly understand where you're coming from, and it's interesting that you talk about having sort of putting the pieces together in 2009, even though you sort of knew stuff at a younger age. Because I guess, like as I said, for me it was a few years ago, like a couple of years ago, I sort of from a dark place I started to realize all this stuff. But I guess back in school, I sort of had that same traumatic experience and things specifically related to war, you know, when we used to have Remembrance Day or Anzac Day here in Australia. Right. And we were told about all these stories of war. And it's interesting that, you know, in a school system, you have a minute's silence and you remember all these people that died that you don't know, you know, which is quite a traumatic experience. And then you're told how they used to, you jump over the trenches and run into gunfire valiantly for their country, you know, and you should respect that. And that never really seemed to ring true to me. I guess there was sort of something in the back of my mind that didn't quite make sense why we spent the time doing that. And I remember there's a saying, you know, we use lest we forget. And I remember having to ask my parents, does lest we forget mean we should try to forget how bad it was, or should we try to remember? You know, like I was always confused about that, and it's just weird that's just coming to me now. But
you know,
yeah, I guess what I'm saying is hoax is a good term for it.
You even notice that lest we forget is a mirroring of what you actually should be doing, which is forgetting, because it's not a true story. So even there, they're within the sayings and the slogans, the sloganeering. Manipulating your mind, even at that point. I did want to go back and say that my YouTube thing started at 2009, but prior to that, like news group stuff, this would be early internet stuff. I'd be doing posts on news groups. And as I looked into, as I was evolving and looking into stories on a wider scope and a wider scale, the YouTube just allowed me to do a lot more work and put it out to more people quickly. Because with news groups, I mean, very few people saw that stuff.
So what time do you think you got involved with the news groups?
My earliest news groups would have been back in, when American Online first started. Well, actually, I had one that was called, I want to say it was called Netscape. One of the earliest internet service. It was before American Online, maybe called Netscape. Anyways, it was one of those very early, one of the earliest.
Netscape was one of the early browsers, wasn't it? Netscape Navigator.
Yeah, one of those. It was something like that. Where, anyways, they had a news group, and of course, back then you were competing with the Area 51. Area 51 was big back then, you know, so you're trying to compete with that kind of nonsense. So the idea of, you know, what you're looking at above your head is just lights. That was way out there. Nobody wanted to hear that because they were wanting to believe that they had, you know, UFOs in some secret base in Nevada. You know, that they would rather believe that story. So it was a long time coming. But then when I got into video, I was able to do a lot of things that I couldn't do in newsgroup, meaning that I was able to put, you know, picture and word. And I did a lot of skits before, you know, make like, you know, short movies and things like that in order to get the point across about some of the silliness of what was being put out. And what got me noticed and where most people know me from, was not even that early work. They knew me from the hoax was going down. I put out a video at the very time it was breaking on American TV, California. I put out a video that said, I said, listen, don't worry about this. Nobody's children are being hurt, period. And then I went through some of the name usage and it was a quick video where I was just talking to the camera. And that video took off like wildfire, and then that channel got shut down. It had gone over a million views.
Around what time? This was 2012, was it?
That was 2012. So yeah, so a lot of the work that I had done prior to that, really until after that, and I had to re-upload it because it got, that whole channel, like I said, got shut down from that Sandy Hoax video. Because once it got over a million views, then it got shut down.
Yeah, so even back then, being shut down once they got too, it would be a little too big, you know.
Along that vein. So yeah, that's where I ran into characters, which I'll call them, and gatekeepers in the internet community. People like Jeff C., Max Malone. What did I run into? I'm trying to think of some other characters that kind of were Pied Pipers at the time. And they came in after me, like the Max Malone came in a couple of days after and tried to steer the course on the Sandy Hoax. You couldn't really contain it at that time. The word was already out. It was a hoax, but it just kind of blew up after
prominent,
that.
It's one of the most sort of prominent ones. I think there must be a sort of an overwhelming amount of flaws in that narrative because it's still the one most people refer to, you know, when they think of false events. I mean, there's not so much obvious evidence with a lot of the stuff. Like once you can sort of see, you can see, and we all get it, but, probably one of the most sort of significant things you can do to wake up to it is sort of look at that event. I mean, it's sort of dribbled down through different layers of the sort of online community, and you know, all different people put out content on it. So,
what a lot of people don't know is at that time, if I wasn't doing that, because I was really more interested in the I'd been filming the sky for a year. Every once during the day and once at night, I'd go out and film, you know, shoot the sky still in video because I wanted to understand a complete year cycle of what I saw above my head. Meaning so that when I spoke about it, I witnessed it. And, I had been doing cannabis reviews at the time as well for a little over 3,000 of them at that point in time. And that was under Mr. Dave J channel. Where I was doing cannabis reviews. So I did a little over 3,000 of those. So I've done a lot of different things.
Just why you mentioned being able to witness it for yourself, and I'll get on to the topic of spiritual murder in a moment, but I just wanted to wrap up some thoughts on what we're talking about with the online community. I guess for me, because I was, for the last few years, living in this little tiny corner, it becomes quite overwhelming to realize that there's so much more out there that you didn't see. It's just, you know, through chance, you didn't click on the right links or find the right people. But I feel like, in a way, I kind of missed out not being exposed to your material in the past, you know. Like, when I hear JLB talk about the peak of the skepticism community and Max Resistance and all these characters that I'm completely unaware of, it really opens my mind. Like, the fact that I've just been in this tiny little tight corner where I knew these certain characters I wanted to follow, but it probably would have been good at the time if I had someone to introduce me to a few other things, you know, a few other ideas that might have been out there. And I guess there's nothing I expect you to comment on that. It's just me just going over my own thoughts here. And it's just weird when you wake up to the fact that you were so closed off, even aware of the whole narrative of that we're given about life. Even in your little skeptic sub-community, you're still closed off to so much, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, so let me move on. Of spiritual murder, and you've been, you know, this has created quite a bit of friction in the fakeologist community. in the last few months since you brought it up in the War is Hoax chat initially with Gaia. And there's something, for me, it really rings true. And I've got to say, the idea of going around suggesting, you know, that someone died if you didn't witness it yourself is quite an elegant idea that maybe, you know, anyone, you know, shouldn't go. And I didn't understand it at first. I didn't understand when you started saying people were spiritually murdering, I had no idea of what you meant. I just sort of assumed, oh, well, you're saying people died. That's the murdering, that the people died. Or I didn't quite get it. But after you explained it in a follow-up call about the fact that it's your own spirit, suggesting that someone died puts your spirit in a low position. And I started to realize, well, maybe there's a lot of stuff in life that we shouldn't go around telling people unless we've witnessed it ourselves. And that's what I like about the fact that you were photographing the sky for a whole year to understand the cycles.
Right. And also I'd like to go as a sideline to the understanding. You spoke about spiritual murder perfect. I mean, there's nothing I would add to it that I haven't said before. But also what you said about walking or going into a room or bringing up in a discussion something, I wouldn't even bring up something that I witnessed that I knew would bring people down. If there was no reason, those people would have to become aware of it. If you understand? So let's say that I had something.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then
part of our psychology seems to be that we go around, we often just go around purporting negatives to people all the time. And it's no different here in the skeptic community of people that are somewhat aware of what's going on. It's still, you know, like you said in that grab earlier, it's a race to the pit.
That's what I'm saying. It's like people have to foremost check themselves. Like if they have something, a thought that comes to their mind before they open their mouth, because, you know, that's the weapon. That's the tongue. Tongue is, you know, is the weapon. Before they wield that weapon out and slash around with it, ask themselves, why am I bringing this up into this room? And is it even something I should be doing? And what result am I looking for? Am I looking for a reaction? You know, am I looking to, you know, what is the purpose of this? And most of the time, it's just to fill space, because most of the time what people should be doing is remaining silent.
It's very uncomfortable with remaining silent. I think people sort of like to come in a room and talk and you know, have something to talk about. And it just seems to be the course of events that it's always something negative, you know.
That's because, like I say, that's their temples house all that negativity. You know, so their temples are a house of negativity. It's a temple of death. You know, and that's too bad.
When you talk about, the idea of this divine revelation, very dark place. I mean, I know I've experienced some very dark places, and for me, I haven't had examples of divine revelation, sudden moments of clarity out of those very dark places. I mean, I've you know, my life hasn't always been. I mean, I wouldn't say it's a bad life, but for me, just my own personal outlook has not always, you know, been so comfortable with it. Divine revelation, and I mean, I can only wish something might happen to me where all the numbers start to click into place. And I mean, perhaps it's something I can do through practice. But you talk about following Jesus Christ and having that divine revelation. What are your opinions on religion, and how do you reconcile the Bible with how many other religions there are, you know, across the plane?
That's interesting, because it's I'm not following a person, you know. There's not some vague memory of a person in my mind that I'm walking behind. It's the Christ that I'm following, meaning the light or the truth which he offered. All right. So then he offers you free will. If you are willing to accept it, do you believe in what, you know, the light that I was sent? Do you believe in what I am as that light? So then if you do, and which I did, I said, don't just show me one thing. I said, I'm asking that you show me everything. So the understanding of seek and you shall find. I said, I want to know everything down to the base. I want to know the truth, period, because I was done. So then you get that revelation. You get what the Bible says is a workman is worth his wages. You know, it's meaning that the work you put in is what you'll get out. So then if you harbor doubts and this, that, or the other thing, then those doubts are going to manifest in lack of understanding. So then how do I take the Bible, this, that, and the other thing. Well, a lot of things within the Bible are speaking about, they'll have the word God and whatnot, but they're speaking of kings and things like that, which has been changed to fit a political spectrum within a country, meaning that if certain kings wanted to be considered gods, they would be within a text, they would be referred to as a god, meaning that's not God who's saying that, that is someone who called themselves God who's saying that. So you have to be very mindful, and it's called discernment. You can read every word and discern and not trust every spirit, not trust every story that you hear, and you must discern and then separate the wheat from the chaff. So you only accept what you've verified yourself as being true. The rest can be thrown away for all I care. And it doesn't matter to me. So I don't sit there, and I'm definitely not one that sit there, and I'm not an apologist, that's for sure, because I know what I know through work. Right? And my work stands on its own. It's my own work. It's got my name to it. It's got my witness to it. Somebody else's work, and I don't speak to that.
You put in numerology in the Bible and overlaying what you see about numbers in the chapter and verse in the Bible.
Well, numerology, numbers, is, like I say, numbers goes back to everything. So a false story can be told to you by the numbers for it to seem logical to you, but also a truth is going to be told to you by the numbers. And it's going to seem logical to you, but not only logical, but it is also true. It uses the same number system. You understand? The number system doesn't change from a lie to a truth. So it's going to be the same thing. So the 9/11, that isn't necessarily it's not an evil understanding. It is just an understanding of how it works, of how the schematic, what I call the mind computer works. That is just when you accept something into your mind as being a truth. That is the 9/11. That's what brings you back around to the cycle and allows you to learn and add more to it. So through your work and through your experiments, you are building your own temple, right? You're building what your understanding is. You're building your own witness, and then you will stand. This is my understanding. You will stand and present your own witness at some point, right? And that is what you'll be responsible for.
You're saying the numbers aren't inherently good or evil. So the controllers that orchestrate an event like the Twin Towers, revelation in putting those numbers there that people believe it, you know.
It's specific. If you understand the base code of the truthful system and you want to tell a believable lie or a logical lie, you then mirror that same system, all right? Meaning that you just use its negative, the understanding of black and white, 6 and 9, meaning that if I just turn and reflect the idea, think about it as a reflection in water, something in stable water without any movement, it's going to look like the exact same object, but it's not the actual object, is it? It's a reflection of an object, giving you something that looks like an absolute truth, and it looks like you could hold it in your hand and use it, but it's actually not really there. It's not a truth. Mirage. It's a hoax. It's a fabrication.
But by putting the numbers there, they're paying tribute to that structure that caused you to believe it in the first place.
There's no way you can't put the numbers there. The numbers are just it's just an organic part of the system. However, to create a lie that would withstand scrutiny by a casual observer, let's say, it must be done by the numbers. So if you understand the way it works, and they do, to build the lie, it must be built upon a foundation of the same number structure, built on a faulty foundation, meaning it's built on an untruth. All right. So what I'm saying is the numbers are not inherently good or evil. It is either a truth or a fallacy, but in order for it to seem logical to the mind and the way the mind works, you have to use that system. All right. It's hard to make an example, but I guess you could say you know, within a, then take a Coke can of you and they give you a standard size marble, just a standard size marble that fits in your palm. So you know that that's the marble they're talking about. They give you a little Coke can and they said you on the YouTube that where a guy put 10 million of these marbles in that Coke can, he made them fit. You took that number in your mind and you said, you know, that's not true. I know that that's not true because it doesn't fit. But he says that they saw a video where they took, where a guy took 20 marbles and he put it into a Coke can. Well, you say, okay, logically, yeah, 20 marbles would fit in a Coke can. Why wouldn't I believe that? I used it. I took something that you would find logical and believable and I just made up a story. It has to be logical. It's got to be within the realm of you believing it.
Yeah, but I mean, they didn't do it on the 4th of the 5th. They did it, I guess, maybe there's something I'm not understanding here, but the fact that they use 9/11 is paying tribute to this, to the, like, you can see how the numbers are the structure of the brain computer, as you say. An event like 9/11 is paying tribute to the actual process of belief. Is that the idea?
Well, it's really more paying tribute to the temple. Is all that is. It's basically paying tribute to this case, what would be Solomon's temple idea. Kind of a hoax play. So they're always paying tribute to the temple of Solomon, which is, you know, not, and that goes back to the 9/11 code. So yeah, the fact that they like to do things on the date of a 9/11, it's not that, it's specifically because those numbers are there and they're involved. So yeah, then paying tribute, it's not an issue for me. You know, it's just a reinforcement of the.
I think that there's significance in the dates of a lot of other, like the dates of other events that have happened.
Yeah, there's when you go through numerology, there's certain dates that hold more power than others, and especially say July 4th in the United States. Something that happens on what's called Christmas Day, so or Valentine's Day. So you have a lot of hoaxes that happen, like in America, you have the St. Valentine's Day massacre, right? So then, what's easy to do when you do something like that is you're able to combine a known holiday or a holiday that they've already given you, but you're able to fill that day up from start to finish with stories of remembrances. And you kind of bring you up and down all day. So you have a day that's supposed to be enjoyed for us for love or companionship, but yet they'll bring you into the remembrance of a hoax death, which brings you down. Mm-hmm. And they'll give you, you see how they whipsaw you, which is a saying, they whipsaw you. You bring you up and down. And it's quite an evil, if that's the right word, or just say a manipulation of people's mind. People misunderstand the word evil too, and it's just of ill intent, meaning that you set out to create someone's mind. And that's the understanding of evil, you know.
Often that so-called evil is really for someone's own benefit. Like the person who does the evil, really, they're only doing it to get themselves ahead, generally, would you say? Or
that, or
the intent is to do it just for the fun of it.
Some monetary value, or there's something being pushed. There's some idea being pushed, or acceptance of an idea being pushed. You know, whether it be they want a population to accept an idea, so they condition the population through stories and through dates, so that each date at this time, you guys will react as a whole by doing this, which in a lot of cases is a minute of silence, let's say. People did not accept the root of that story. They would never accept standing around for a minute in silence about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So everything has a purpose. And some are small purposes and some are much larger and some are all, you know, just combinations of all of it and some are just additions too. I think it's best to be able to, if you understand if you understand the base code, the schematic of the system, of the mind itself and how it can be manipulated, then you can free yourself from ever falling for it is a trap, all right? will be secure if you don't fall for the trap.
It does make me quite uncomfortable when a whole bunch of people will do something en masse and all conform to some belief system, like the minute silence and that. It is a bit eerie, you know?
Pretty creepy. I think it's actually, yeah, it's creepy.
Is there anything, I interrupted you there. Is there anything else you wanted to say on that?
Good.
Going back to the war hoax, you talked, was it the Navy? You said you're in the Navy for 10 years?
For 10 years.
A bit about when you got involved with that and what motivated you to go and be a part of that?
I was 17 and I wanted to get out of Los Angeles because I grew up in at the Hollywood kind of the TRW, IBM type environment. Most of the people that lived by me were all in those industries. Whereas I always didn't, I was never comfortable within that area, because that's also the area that was leading me and, you know, trying to tell me that these stories were true when I knew they weren't. So I just wanted to get out of there. So at the time, I knew that war, as far as I knew, it wasn't what they were claiming it was. So then I go into the Navy at 17, and guess what? No problem. I was never in danger. It was never an issue. I was overseas and all this good stuff. And it was basically a job at that point. So I do have some interesting information on, let's say, weapons. And that would be everyone that I ever saw tested didn't work. It didn't work.
Because you had an idea that things weren't as you're being told, you went into it and set out to see if that was the case?
No, I was really more motivated at the time to get out of L.A. Than anything, and that was the easiest thing to do. But school wasn't going well, you know. It wasn't. I just knew that wasn't going to work out for me. So I got into that. But then, as I was getting to testing and doing this weapons idea, I said, "We're testing these weapons, and I never see them work." Say so what I understood is we had Westinghouse and Honeywell and all these contractors who keep building these things and who kept facts. So yeah, I became jaded quite quickly. I understood it was just nothing more than a revolving door, meaning that, okay, we give you this design, it doesn't work, therefore we're going to give you a new design, it doesn't work, and this merry-go-round goes around and around and around, right? Go to the Middle East, I go to the so-called first Gulf War. It's all BS. There's nothing going on there. You know, there's no war happening. It's a clown show. It's like I say, it's controlled demolition and strategic relocation. I was part of the relocation. The only type of weapon that does work is a very simple weapon, which is nothing more than like a big gun. That would be the 3 and 5 inch guns, things like that, because you're just projectile with a powder. With a powder charge behind it. So it's a pretty simple concept. And all we ever did was just shoot at a deserted island. And just a few. We ever did.
It's remarkable that crazy that people are happy to sit on YouTube and question, you know, their perception of the shape of the Earth. Yet it's heresy to suggest that, you know, things aren't actually as they appear on the TV when we see, you know, flag draped coffins coming out the back of a large aircraft. And I mean, like, if I can...
Yeah, I've actually tried to pull stories out when I was by them, where they were saying, oh, I was in Iraq and I was getting shot. I said, no, you weren't. You weren't being shot at, period, isn't it? And this was one guy who was coming back from the Army. And he goes, no, we were being shot. And I said, no, you weren't being shot at. And he finally just stopped talking.
It gives people this little podium to stand on, and they, you know, for some degree, like, people seem to keep up the story, so they're able to sort of, you know, bathe in that light for a little while in people's eyes. Is that the idea?
Well, it's a
soldiers' egos, or?
It's a gift that keeps on giving. You know, if you come back from the military, if you basically just give a wink and a nod, that people are going to think you were in something. You were in the shit. That's what they say. Oh, I was in the shit. And then they're able to just get away with a wink and a nod, and then people say, oh, well, he probably doesn't want to talk about it because he shouldn't have.
That's the classic meme, isn't it? The soldiers don't talk about it because it was so horrific. They probably killed heaps of people, but they don't talk about it, you know?
It's nonsense. And so what happens is you have a bunch of guys who go out into the bush, and it sucks. And so they start drinking and they start doing drugs. So if you want to know something that's prevalent in the military, it's going to be the amount of drunks and drug addicts that you have, because that they're doing something that passes the time. Drinking is a big part of the military, huge part.
I know from like veterans clubs and things like that there's a large problem with drinking, after the supposed wars. I mean, even you look at movies like Apocalypse Now. One of the craziest things is that they're going up the river to bring back Colonel Kurtz or whatever, and they're all tripping on acid and smoking weed and the whole things. It's more of a psychological adventure.
Let me tell you, because you have these guys who are coming from air conditioning and all this stuff, and they go out into the bush for a week or two with the bugs and everything else, and it sucks. It does suck. So they have these experiences, but their experience is not what has been advertised. Emotional cruelty to these people.
When we talk about the advancement of weapons and technology and things that happen in the sort of military industrial complex, and if I can share a story with you here, I've got an uncle that I can't remember whether it was like Lockheed Martin or one of these big military contractors he worked for, and he always. I think sort of got off on the idea that, I can't talk about it. I'm sworn to secrecy. I have to do security checks and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, what is this? Like, I don't think, for the most part, there's no single human that is just incredibly smarter than everyone else. Like, for the most part, most of this has to be bullshit. Like, I mean, the idea that someone dreamt up all these amazing things, like being able to calculate how to get to the moon, like, I don't think anyone's really doing any of that stuff. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on the advancement of weapons and technologies, because he supposedly developed a stealth plane that was so amazing. And here's what I think's the funniest bit. It used to leak fuel. That was the thing. They told you intentionally, we have to let it leak fuel. It has to leak fuel on the runway. And I'm thinking that is the most insane thing I've ever heard, you know?
That's the same story that they used to tell about the SR-71.
That's it. The SR-70 or my 71, whatever. Yeah.
71, yeah. As far as all that, it's just, they're, like I said, they're just, they call them sea stories in the Navy. Interesting, going back to one of our very first few minutes of talking, sea story. Yeah, sea story. So it's just nothing more than a sea story. So they're just stories being told, which, like I say, fits in your story's case. It fits his ego. He's able to up his ego with that story, because then he is seen as almost like a 007 secret agent kind of guy. Because
yes, and that's what I took from it. Like, as a little kid, that was amazing to me. But as I've grown up and realized there's nothing really beyond the achievement of any average human, I've sort of started to look at it a bit more skeptically and go, this guy really gets off on the idea of sitting around the table and telling everyone he can't talk about what he developed, you know?
Interesting about that also is that you have those that don't want to talk about it, yet they'll bring it up that they can't talk about it.
I need to bring it to the dinner table,
And like I say, that's another. And the whole thing about calculating the mathematics to calculate going to the moon. Well, one, it's not actually. It's just a light in the sky that's just right above your head. So that whole concept is nonsense, because there is no right answer. So whatever answer they came up with is correct.
It is so fantastical, isn't it? It took me a while. Like, I've always known, even like I said, I've woke up to this in the last couple of years. I'm 27 years old now, and I think on Fakeologist things like that, I'm probably one of the younger people in this community. But for me, obvious a few years ago, but even since I was 15, 16, I'd always sort of been skeptical of the moon. But it's been a while to actually comprehend the fact that maybe it's not actually a physical place. Like, I can go outside and I can sense that it's quite close and it's just there, And I don't get how people can't see that, Like, it really can be, confronting sometimes that you realize you're surrounded by people living in this matrix that really can't even comprehend that they've been lied to or think, you know, the TV has good intent when it shares these stories with them of, Elon Musk's, dummy in his car flying through space. And you look at that footage and you just think, like, how more obvious can they make it, you know?
It's just ridiculous. I'm just about 50 now. An experience in the 70s and 80s kind of discussing this type of stuff.
So
there's no internet to direct people to show them what you were talking about. You would have to go to the libraries to get books, and they very rarely put anything out but the standard set of pictures. Of course people would defriend you well before Facebook in the 80s if you told them that nobody landed on the moon. They just wouldn't talk to you anymore. And of course, so like I say, it's not as lonely anymore with the advent of the internet because you can talk with more people who understand it. But you're dealing with a town back then before the internet. You may be the only one that you know of that thinks the way you do.
No, I guess there's a lot to be thankful for. Things like Fakeologists. Like, I mean, I've only been involved with that, in the more recent months. But, no, it's good to be able to reach out to people. And we still deal with the typical kind of internet trolls and the same kind of friction you'd expect no matter what you were discussing, that it can be hard to trust people and, to gain trust, all that kind of stuff. But for the most part, at least you don't feel as isolated because you know, other people are purporting this stuff, especially when there's people like yourself who actually put out videos and can demonstrate ideas and articulate ideas. There's one other topic I wanted to, draws quite a bit of controversy on Fakeologist in particular is the Tony Abbott and Tony Blair idea. And I find it interesting that you say Tony A and Tony B, because the A and B thing is kind of like one and two, you know, it's like the two options of the two Tonys. Do you think that could be part of the idea behind it?
Yeah, to me, that was why I always, when I first did that video, I put Tony A as Tony B. And in the parentheses, I put one and then two next to the A, one, B, two, because I was speaking at the time about the
But you're on that idea, yeah, okay.
I spoke about the 12 being the reverse 21, 777 understanding. It's something I don't know, you may have heard me talk to you about that, but that's another. The understanding about the three is a bell ring. Remember I talked to you about once that bell ring happens, you go through the door. So that was why I titled it the way I did. And I know that gets people upset. However, I went through and I looked at the characters. I looked at the mother, the father, the so-called wife. They looked the same to me. I did three videos on that whole Tony A's, Tony B. And I put them out for people to... Oh, hold on.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
So like I told Rolo one time, I said, if he's willing to do the work and to prove me wrong, so be it. It's not something that I'm too worried about. However, it's after three videos and the work that I did with it, until proven otherwise.
I find it interesting that a lot of people seem to confuse you with Dallas Goldbug. I mean, like, I don't know you from your work because I haven't been exposed to your stuff, when you're in your peak of putting out videos. But I have stumbled across Dallas Goldbug before, and I think a lot of it sort of is just a ratings contest just to be able to put out something new every day.
Actually, I have a personal experience with him. He claimed that I was... He claimed I was Mark Zuckerberg. He claimed I was Tony Hawk, of all people. He claimed I was a BMX racer. He was over 10 different people that I was supposedly. He even has a video up still that he's outed me as some character of some sort of Greenberg or something.
Feel about the success of your own channel? That people are willing to point the finger and accuse you of those kind of things.
Yeah, well, at the time it was because I had corrected him on a couple of misdirections he put out. because his work now doesn't reflect what it first started to be. Because if you're going to be a good show, you're going to, like he is, he put out some good information at the beginning and then started to sprinkle in the nonsense, right? So then I saw a few that were just off the wall, and this was back when he had just had a Facebook page, and I corrected them. And man, as soon as I did that, it was over. He turned like a rabid dog on me. History. So I was into much bigger things at that point than just that.
Can you go over just to enlighten me as to sort of the main topics you've covered in your videos? Because I mean, I know you've had channels shut down, and your work can be harder to find at the moment. Can you just talk me through sort of a timeline of what kind of work you put out?
A lot of work on the moon, the stars, the sun as being lights in the sky. I did 30 plus videos on the shape of the ground you walk on. Several videos, hundreds and hundreds of videos on the different individual hoaxes and how to break those down. I also had several calls to where I would call police departments, government officials, CIA, FBI, all those different type of groups. I would actually call them and record the call about the hoaxes they were putting out and explaining to them the problems I had with it. And of course, I called those were live reaction calls, so they weren't planned, and I just put those up, you know, for people to listen to, and it was very interesting because a lot of them they folded like cheap suits, and they just get rage and they get mad at me and start yelling at me, and then I went through that. I also did skits concerning, you know, I did one where I was. It had to do with the Laxi. It was called the Laxi Musical, the LAX hoax, Laxi Musical, where I created, using the keyboard and the guitar, and I created a skit where I was walking around with a backpack and no passport. You know, just walking through, getting through the scanners and everything with no problem. Because I was Nicky Pug. I was like, if you don't know me, I'm Nicky Pug. And Nicky Pug is the character from the main character from that hoax. You would have to have been there, I guess. But anyways, so I did a lot of skit shows like that just to liven it up. I did ammo reloading videos, cannabis reviews.
Stuff available, or do you have archives of all the material you put out?
I'm trying to recover some now because I have some hard drives which have failed. So I'm trying to get a new over to try and recover some of that data, and then I'll be reposting a lot of that. But no, I have literally thousands and thousands of videos that are gone in the wind.
Yeah. Hard drive recovery can be if they're if you can't read from them. On that topic, I believe you said you made a lot of your money and you from semiconductor, and you've done work in the Philippines.
Oh yeah, I was in. Go ahead.
Can you give, are you happy to give a bit of background as to what kind of work or what you know, stuff you do with semiconductor, and explain a bit about what that is, and tell us about the work you've done in the Philippines?
Let's just take, for example, if you're going to create a head for a hard drive, and I worked in photolithography and sputter vacuum, plate polish, that type of, also X-ray and CD SIM, magnification, verification, things like that. But to explain it easier, I would say that you take a silicon wafer and you lay down what's called photoresist onto it. You then take through a Nikon Canon Ultratech stepper machine, you create an image through a mask or a reduction system. So then you create an image onto this wafer. It could be several onto a wafer. You expose that image, wavelength, light, all right? Then you take that exposed substrate or silicon wafer, you develop out the exposed resist, and it comes out and it becomes almost like a mold. Powder metal into, depending if it's going to be a conductive layer or an insulative layer. It could be gold, platinum, you know, a mixture of those. It could be alumina if it's a insulation layer. So anyways, you do that and you strip away the unexposed,
So it's kind of like if it's an etching a PCB or something, but you're doing it with light. Is that the gist of it?
So, and that's how I know That's why I know my light background. I did that for 15 years, so I understand light way, way, and the understanding of tones, too. Oh, and that's another big thing. A big category of videos I did was on tones, tunes, the idea and understanding that there's not only a 9/11 number, but there's a 9/11 frequency, which I showed can move matter, right? So it can not only physically move your mind in a direction, but it can physically move matter on a table and sand granules like that. So I was trying to show not only the spiritual side, but the actual manifestation of that truth in the physical, showing you 9/11 tone having moving material on a flat surface just with sound waves, things like that. That was another big aspect.
Like 911 hertz is what you mean?
Not necessarily. It goes into the, so if you're 911 code, it would be more like 27.5 hertz, well, between 27.5 and 30.868, somewhere in that range. In fact, directly in the middle there, would be your, you know, let's say 29.135 would be the, what I call the 911 frequency, and with that frequency you can move matter. Okay.
And how did you come up with that frequency is what I'm asking.
I tested everything. It goes across on your 9/11 scale. So if you look at your on your MIDI scale or your sound scale, it directly corresponds with 9116, all right, which is your 69. I remember we talked about the 9 and the 6 coming together. Anyways, it directly relates to either side of the 11. All right. Okay, so that's how that relates to the 9/11, because it is directly related to that the idea of movement, not only movement of a person's mind moves their body, but also how 9/11 through the MIDI code or MIDI frequencies can actually move material in the material world. That's just another side thing I was trying to show.
Experience with MIDI programming before you looked at this, or you learned about it because of this?
So I did also on the side. I had a computer. I used to program game levels for specific games. I did that for a long time. I had an Invisible Lane Studios company for a long time. That was my own thing. I was a one-man band, so I kind of I knew of it from there by working with music and tones for that side of it. So I had that background. And they've gone away from MIDI. MIDI was kind of used in early video game, and they've gone into MP3 and things like that since then.
Once MIDI, the size was up to it. I mean, MIDI was just in those early days where, in a sense, it was one of the most elegant forms of compression, because the decoding side stored all the information, and it was really just an instruction set. You know, as compression technology has improved, it's so much easier to send, you know, an MP3, or these days we have incredible video compression algorithms that can, you know, you can do 4K video now down to tiny sizes with you know, H.265 and things like that.
So, yeah, that was kind of my background within the computer field, was working with the Doom engine and what was the original Unreal Engine.
It's interesting that you had that exposure to a lot of the technologies and that. Like, I mean, part of my, like, it's hard to say I wouldn't be who I was today, because, like, I am who I am today. It's a circular reasoning and this weird argument I get myself into sometimes. You know, I think that there's certain parts that working in the media and being exposed to kind of the drivel that they put out and that certainly made it a lot easier to transition into this mindset that I'm, I guess it's understood, like with your MIDI and things, it's understanding the mechanics of some of this stuff that allow us to see through the veil, you know. Like, I think most people have some sort of exposure to the instruction set, as it were.
It's also important to actually physically do the experimentation and the work yourself, so that when you express something as being true, it's something that you physically tested and have proven to yourself first that it's true, and that somebody else can then take that and test it. They don't have to believe it, but they can test it. And then if the result then matches your result, then there you have it.
And just on that thought, we'll wrap up in just a second. I just wanted to play a clip of your cornerstone thoughts, as I call it.
Let me work this down to, like I call the cornerstone. Let me at least build what I'm going to put between my ears onto a cornerstone that is based on the truth by looking at the world as you see it and building a foundation on your provable observations by what you walked out and you proved by your own eyes, your own ears, your own hand. Then you believe and you witness to what you prove, and that it doesn't matter what anyone else says, because that's what you're going down with.
I think for the most part, people are really just walking around without even understanding that notion of the cornerstone and building upon something that they've done and seen with their own eyes. And I'm probably even guilty of that for the most part. Like, I mean, it's very easy to be led around by the stories we're told. And even once we think we're aware of this sort of higher power or bigger purpose, we're still not really verifying it for ourselves.
Yeah, you have to trust what you have verified yourself only. Like I say, test every word before you accept it as truth. It's everything you hear.
Anyway, I'd like to thank you for joining me today in the Fakeologist live stream chat. My name's Velocet, and I've been here with Dave J. A lot of his thoughts on his beliefs now, but also history in the world, and a lot of things he was up to at a younger age, some of the things he put out on YouTube, et cetera, et cetera. I want to thank you for joining me today, Dave. It's much appreciated.
You're welcome. No worries. We'll talk again for sure.
Yeah, that I would look forward to that. I'm just going to play a track to take us out, and this is Dave J nominated the artist. It's David Sanborn, who's a smooth jazz artist. And I guess I don't mind a bit of smooth jazz myself. So I'll meet you out there in the lobby. But
nice.
Everyone on Fakeologist, thanks for tuning in and listening.
Hi, this is Heroes from Tampa, Florida, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.